is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to One Bills Drive. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show. John Murphy, Donald Jones here for the next 3 hours as we wrap up the Bills 2017 season and look forward starting next week. We should talk about next week a little bit, right off the hop here, Donald, even starting tomorrow. It's a natural break now with the end of the Bills season last Sunday. We're going to be off for a couple of days. No show tomorrow, no show next Monday and Tuesday. Let that sink in a little bit.
Yeah. Did it sink in for you yet?
It sunk in for me about 5 minutes after I heard about it yesterday. Yes.
That was great.
It is great. And it's, like I said, it's a natural break, right? A natural reset for our show, for the Bills season. We have made a concerted effort this week to kind of focus looking back this week on our show, you know, what went well for the Bills, what needed to change for the Bills. And when we return next Wednesday, our next show after today is Wednesday, I think we'll kind of dive into what needs to happen, right, in terms of draft picks and personnel and what are the shortcomings. I think that's fodder for next week, don't you, Donald? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we'll be talking about it from next week until free agency starts and through the draft. And then once, you know, they draft the players and you'll be talking about the players that they actually draft. There's so much talk free agency. That's why we decided this week is better to just look back at the season, especially a season where you actually did end the drought, a season where you hired a new coach. They get to the playoffs in his first year as the head coach here. New coach, new GM, new front office, you know, I mean, for them to be able to get to the playoffs in their first year is great. So you want to look back at the season a little bit. And then next week you start to figure out, okay, this person is going to be a free agent here. What do we have? How many free agents do we have?
Got a lot. I made a list today on a story I wrote today, but there's
key players on this year's team that are going to be free agents that might want big money that they might not bring back. You know, so it's something that we're going to be talking about from now through free agency.
But for today, here's what we're going to do. Here's the plan for today. One more time, a look back at the 2017 season, and we're going to do it in this regard, 2017 encompassing the entire year. And you all know the upheaval that went on around here over the last 12 months, starting with, a year ago today or tomorrow, hiring the head coach, Sean McDermott? Was that a year ago
today? That was a year ago yesterday, wasn't it?
No, I think it was today.
It was today, okay.
It's one of these days. Sean McDermott, let me look it up. Sean McDermott hired just about a year ago. And since that time, it's been major upheaval. It was exactly 1 year ago today.
Oh, okay.
Major upheaval, major roster churn, a lot of changes. Our heads were spinning on more than one occasion this year when news would break and be like, what? They traded who?
Yeah.
They did what? And so in an effort to kind of put all that behind us, we're going to take one last look today at everything that went on last year and get your thoughts about what the best thing was from a personnel standpoint, the best roster move the Bills made in 2017. That's our Twitter poll. That's where we start from today. What do you think was the Bills' best roster move in 2017? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Think about it first, though. What was the Bills' best roster move in 2017? Already in the early going here, more than two-thirds of you, 68%, say the addition of Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, the best roster move the Bills made. 12% say acquiring the draft picks that they did and some of those trades for Sammy Watkins in particular. 18% say the drafting of Tre'Davious White first round was the best roster move. How about the entire draft? I think that was a really good, solid draft for the Bills. How about the trade for Kelvin Benjamin? Really good, solid roster move. Benjamin obviously struggled with knee issues during his half-season tenure here, but I think that bodes well for the future. What do you think as you think about it? What was the Bills' best roster move in 2017? You can go all the way back to the offseason last year, whether it was free agency when Hyde and Poyer came in, maybe some of the other free agents. You can go back to the draft last April. You can go back to the trades made in August, you know, when they shipped away Ronald Darby and Sammy Watkins, got players and picks in return. The addition of draft picks, I think, was pretty important. Or you can go even to October 31st and even before that. You know, maybe it's maybe you think some of the best roster moves the Bills made were the subtractions from the roster, whether it's Marcell Darius or the aforementioned Watkins and Darby. Maybe you think those are the best roster moves or the addition of Calvin Benjamin. Whatever it is, I want you to evaluate the last year in Bills personnel. And there's a lot of good moves, maybe some moves that you thought were questionable at the time, maybe some moves you still think are questionable. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. What was the Bills' best roster move in 2017? The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What was the Bills' best roster move in 2017? I have a hard time knocking it down to one, Donald. I really do. But I'm going to go with addition of draft picks. They have tremendous draft capital to work with this year. They have an extra first rounder. You can go back to that trade down in the draft last year and count that as a roster move. They have an extra first rounder this year. They have an extra second rounder this year. They used an extra third rounder they had to pick up Calvin Benjamin. They have, I added it up today, they have five picks. No, more than that, 2, 4, 6. They count them up there. In the first 95 selections this year, the Bills have five picks. Yeah. First three rounds. 95, the first 100 picks, essentially, they have five picks. They've got a lot to work with. All of it set up by the roster moves they made in the last year. Let us know what you think. I vote for that as the best thing the Bills accomplished from a personnel standpoint. The addition of all of those draft picks, what it does for building for the future, starting with this year's draft, the addition of all of those picks, to me, among some other good moves, to me, that was the best roster move the Bills made in 2017. What about you?
I think I have to agree, and I hate to agree with you.
You'll get over it.
No, I think I have to agree with you because and the addition of Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, those guys played great this year. Lots of interceptions, lots of big plays, sacks, I mean, tackles all over the place. And they were a big reason why this team was in the playoffs this year. And that's a big thing. And they're going to be big moving forward in the future as well. But draft picks are the guys that you really build your team around. You know, those are the guys that when you talk about a core of guys, you build that core with draft picks. And so the fact that you look at the draft picks from last year's draft that played this year, that has significant time, and you talk about Tre'Davious and Deion and Matt Milano, even a guy like Zay Jones, who, you know, people are questioning right now, he has had a chance now to go through a full season of ups and downs, you know, so you have to expect him to be able to come back next year and have a much better season than he did this year. You look at last year's draft, and you look at all of the draft capital that they have this year, I think with all of those draft picks, if you can get all of those draft picks to really give you some significant time, I think that is a huge thing for the future of the franchise. That's the biggest thing. You want to have a very solid future for your franchise. You want to say, you know what? We don't have every year we have 15 guys who are free agents every single year. You know, you want to know that you got a bunch of draft picks still on their rookie contracts, and these guys will be coming back next year to play for you, and they're going to be all playing hard because they want to get to their second contract. Yeah. That's where you want to get to.
They're just about there once they spend these draft picks coming up in April. What's your vote? What was the best roster move for the Bills in 2017? A couple of responses coming in on Twitter. Draft a new QB tweets in all of the above. Tony M. tweets in, I chose other because I could not choose between the options. They were all equally good moves in my book. That's the difficult part here, right? We're trying to get you to isolate it down to the best roster move, in your opinion. John DiCarlo tweets in, obviously Poyer and Hyde brought us stability at safety for years to come. I don't know. Was it obvious? I don't know if it's that obvious. I think those are great acquisitions. Was that the best move? And Jeffrey Garcia,
I think,
critiquing our tweets in, I think you would have done better served with having revamped secondary be a choice. Maybe.
Revamped secondary.
It's our Twitter poll. We put our Twitter poll the way we want our Twitter. No, just kidding.
Because people are probably thinking you had the two safeties and Tre'Davious separate, you know, where you could just put the entire – because you got to add E.J. Gaines in there.
Well, hire a consultant.
Yeah, right, for a Twitter poll consultant. Well, you know, we kind of have one.
Who?
We have a Twitter consultant in the building.
Oh, no, we're good. It should be difficult to answer these questions. That's why I want you to think. I don't think it's an automatic adding Poyer and Hyde, boom. That's the best selection. Think about it. You don't have to answer right away. Give us a call and think about it. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Matt Dermody tweets, in adding picks because in the long run, those will do the most for the team by allowing us to move up in the draft and get a true franchise quarterback we've been lacking for 20 years now. Yeah, maybe. Maybe you use those picks to move up in the draft. But you've got some draft capital to spend because of the roster moves. What was the best one, the best roster move for the Bills in 2017?
Draft
and
picks,
I mean
baby.
All of 2017, going right back to last January, from year, you know, calendar date 2017, January 1st to December 31st. What was the best draft, the best roster move the Bills made last year? I think it is a draft. Tough question.
I mean, it's a tough question. As you look at, you have a revamped secondary, or you just want to talk about the safeties. Those guys made big plays this year, and they were such a big part of getting to the playoffs. But the biggest thing is the future of your franchise now, and you want to be in the playoffs every single year. So I think draft picks, the guys who played last year, and then the bunch of draft picks that they were able to add this year through trades, trading guys away for draft picks. When we were looking at it like, man, you are trading a lot of talent away. Now we're looking at it like, you actually have some draft picks to work with. And you just made the playoffs, you know. So this thing is really moving upwards.
Yeah.
So I think the draft picks are most important because, quite frankly, you do need to find a quarterback. You need to find a franchise quarterback. I don't know if it's going to be in the draft. I don't know if it's going to be via free agency. But I think you do need to find a true franchise quarterback, a guy that you can say, this guy is our franchise quarterback for the next decade and a half. You know, that's what you're trying to get. That's what GMs are trying to get. Dimitroff talked about it with you last year.
Yeah.
Brandon Bean has, you know, said it in other ways. You're trying to find a franchise quarterback. If you don't have one, you're trying to find one.
Let us know what you think. The best roster move. I've got a caller on hold, Alan in Buffalo, who's going to suggest that hiring Sean McDermott was the best roster move. We're talking about player personnel here. 803-0550, the number toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The best roster move the Bills made in 2017. Got a heck of a show here, Donald, as we go out for the week and return next Wednesday. Andrew Brandt, who covers the business of the NFL, going to join us at 12:30. Andrew Brandt will be live on the line with us.
Brandt.
That's what I was waiting for.
You waiting on
that
it?
Was your prompt. Chris Brown going to be in studio with us. He's written a couple of interesting posts on BuffaloBills.com. And Brownie, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com at 1 o'clock. Going to preview at least one of the playoff games this weekend about a team that's really good and we don't hear much about, the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings have an interesting game coming up against the Saints. Pete Bursich, former Vikings tight end, who does the color analysis on their radio network, he'll be joining us today at 1:30. And at 2 o'clock, we're moving him up a day because we have no show tomorrow. Greg Cosell, the analyst and host of ESPN's NFL Matchup, longtime senior producer at NFL Films, will get his take on the Bills, wildcard playoff game, but also looking forward to the four divisional round playoff games this week. It's a good lineup to go out with.
That's a big game.
The Vikings Saints, yeah.
That's a big game. You're talking about an offense that is a machine, a defense that was playing like, you know, top five defense this year. And even the Vikings offense is pretty good. So I that's one of the games that I really want to watch this weekend.
Will you watch all four?
No.
Me neither. It's hard to do that.
I can't watch all four.
I've done it before. And first of all, I feel guilty about 7:30 on Sunday night when you think, oh, my God, that's a weekend gone.
Yeah, the whole weekend is gone.
So
the whole
weekend is gone.
You didn't do anything you were supposed to do.
No, I can't have that weekend.
I just get footballed out, though.
Yeah,
you know,
a little bit.
Truly do. I mean, this past weekend, I didn't really watch the Saints and Panthers game. It could be in part because the Bills had just lost.
Yeah.
But it was also, I was like, I'm done with football this weekend.
Yeah, I watched that one on the plane coming home. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But here's the lineup. If you don't know, here's what your weekend is going to look like. You can pick and choose or watch them all if you want. It starts Saturday, 4:35 p.m., with the Falcons and the Philadelphia Eagles. I might miss that one.
Yep.
Nothing against those two teams, but the Eagles hold little attraction for me now without their quarterback in place. It continues Saturday night with the Titans and Patriots. Yeah, I'm moderately interested in that, seeing how the Patriots handle Tennessee. Shouldn't be much of a heavy lift for them. And then Sunday at 1:05, it's Jacksonville and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I do not expect Jacksonville to give them much of a battle at all, do you?
I can't say I don't expect it. It wouldn't shock me just the way it played out earlier in the year. But that's a game that I want to see. I want to see how Blake Bortles plays.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, if Jacksonville can go into Pittsburgh and beat them.
I've seen enough of Blake Bortles. I have. Saw him at his worst. I will skip that game. And the big game, really, the best game of the weekend, the Saints and the Vikings.
Yeah.
A couple of really good teams going at it. The late game on Sunday, that should be the one to watch. But that's what your weekend looks like. That's what our day looks like. Greg Cosell at 2, Pete Bursich on that game in particular at 1:30, Chris Brown at 1, and just a couple of minutes away from Andrew Brandt, about the business of the NFL. And we want to hear from you as well. We want to know from you, what was the best personnel move the Bills made in 2017, from preseason, from all the way back to the draft, even beyond that last year, to right to the end of the season the other day. The best personnel move the Bills made in 2017. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Scott in Tampa. Go ahead, Scott. You're on the air.
Yeah, to me, I think the best move that they did was letting Stephon Gilmore just walk, because after 4 years of seeing that same look on his face, I saw the same look all year in New England, that it wasn't my fault. Somebody else had was supposed to cover that guy. So
yeah, I mean,
4 years, I was glad to get rid of him.
I
know,
get that.
He's actually come on a little bit out in New England. I think they
he can play. Let's face it.
He can definitely play. He's not one that wants to tackle. There are a lot of corners in this game that don't want to tackle. They mentally, in their mind, I get paid to shut down wide receivers. It might not necessarily even be a true shutdown type of corner. He's a good corner, though, in this league. And I think he's come on a little bit out in New England. But to let him walk, I think it was a good thing for your salary cap here, because he was going to get paid. You saw him get paid up there. I mean, the fact that you were able to – I mean, they revamped their entire secondary. But, I mean, they drafted one, Tre'Davious White, that – really was playing like a rookie of the year, NFL league-wide rookie of the year. And then you brought in E.J. Gaines. Now you got to figure out his whole contract thing. But you were able to get better production out of two corners this year than you were last year with two guys who you felt like, man, you got two of the better corners in the league.
I don't have a problem with Gilmore not being on the Buffalo roster. I have a hard time arguing that was the best move they made. But the callers from Tampa, Scott, maybe in alignment with a guy who tweets in, Brian Rossignol, option four other, cleaning house, which I think helped a bunch change the culture, winning culture. That is an option. I mean, it's under the other factor, but I think the departure of people like Gilmore and Marcell Dareus and maybe Sammy Watkins and Ronald Darby, that was talent. We talked about it with Sean McDermott and with Brandon Bean over the last few days. They let talent leave. Some of them, they got returns in terms of draft picks and players, but talent walked out the door here, all with an eye in the bigger picture, changing the culture, getting the type of players they want. You could argue that that might have been the best personnel moves they made this year.
You know what was interesting? Yesterday, Coach McDermott said, I don't even know if people really picked up on it, because he talks so much about culture and he talks about good character guys. We saw the guys that he drafted last year, and all of them were good character guys. Even guys that they bring in via free agency, they are all good character guys. The one thing that he said yesterday was, once you have enough leadership on your team, you have enough wiggle room now to bring in a guy that might not necessarily be the great character guy that you want, because you have so many leaders on your team.
Yeah.
That's what we were trying to figure out. Like, okay, you know, you want to have good character guys on your team, but what if a dude is a true baller?
Well, that's what allowed in the past the Patriots to bring in a Randy Moss or a Corey Dillon or some other questionable
character. Or Hernandez.
Yeah. Well, that was the extreme. Who knew? But that's what, when you have the kind of a team culture, you can, I think this is what you're saying, you can roll the dice maybe a little bit with a guy who you might not be so sure about, knowing that your other leadership on the team will teach him, show him, this is how we do things.
I wonder how long before he feels he can have that wiggle room. How many draft classes and guys via free agency do you have to bring in before you say, okay, we got a little wiggle room now. We can take a chance on a guy,
It's a good question. We want to hear from you. What was the best roster move, player personnel roster move the Bills made in 2017? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Austin on the line from Utica, New York. Hello, Austin. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hello.
Hi.
Steven Hauschka was what I thought was our best sign.
That's pretty good. Pretty good nominee.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he set an NFL record for us.
Yeah, I mean, he was reliable. He could hit the long range kicks. Handled kickoffs well. The extra points weren't a problem. I think that's a pretty good nominee for the best personnel move. Part of what they did in free agency was get a better kicker, you know, an upgrade. They got a serious upgrade with Hauschka, who's, you know, is one of the captains, seemed to be a leader and a good teammate. And I think that's a really good argument, Austin and Utica. Yeah, maybe Hauschka was. And this is a guy putting points on the board.
Yeah.
Maybe he was the best roster move they made in 2017.
I'm telling you, last year you were going into games not knowing. You never know if a kicker is going to make a kick or not. But last year, it was like, all right, please make this kick.
Mm-hmm.
This year it was like, you kind of expect him to make kicks, even 50-plus. You're like, Hauschka's been money all year, you know? So he made a lot of field goals, a lot of big-time kicks. He was the reason in a few games this year why they actually won the games.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he was a big-time addition to this team.
That might have belonged on our Twitter poll, the incomplete and, in some eyes, insufficient Twitter poll.
I mean, so he should have went with revamped secondary, Steven Hauschka. And what was,
I don't know. But I like having disagreement about this. We want to hear your thoughts, too. The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. As you look back at 2017, going all the way back to a year ago, what was the best roster move, personnel move the Bills made? Let us know what you think. That's our Twitter poll. Love to hear you talk about it on the telephone line. Marshall in North Tonawanda. Go ahead, Marshall.
Hey there, guys. I love the show.
Thank you.
All the time.
Thank you.
All right, so I have a few points I would like to cover. First off, Rex, gone. Okay, that's done with.
That's a year old, and that's not player personnel, but go ahead, Marshall.
I know. I just had to throw that out.
It was more than a year old.
He said I had to throw that
just
out
had to get, every time you talk on the phone, you
say
Rex. Just
get that off your chest, man. You got to get that off your chest. I understand, Marshall. It's all good.
Okay. Well, all right. So, honestly, this is going to sound far-fetched, but Joe Webb really came in on special teams. He didn't do much on offense besides the Patriots game. They tried to use him. But honestly, Joe Webb was there on special teams. I mean, he's not the biggest move, but, like, I'm just talking about he goes with the character of the team. He's willing to put it out there. I played football for 13 years, and I know that Sean McDermott's character building and his demeanor about everything, he's putting guys there that want to play the game and have heart for the game, aren't in it for just the money. And honestly, getting rid of Watkins, like someone earlier said, he was kind of – or no, he was talking about Gilmore. But, yeah, Watkins, he was kind of injury-prone. You know, he wasn't really producing as much as we would want. But the biggest problem with that is we didn't have that long ball guy this year. Like, we got Jordan – we got some scrappy little – you know, intermediate kind of guys in there. And then the red zone threat with Benjamin halfway through the year, but we didn't really pick up that big play guy so Tyrod could have threw it down the field.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no, you didn't have the big play guy this year. I think that's something they should be looking at in free agency or in the draft. You need a speed type of receiver. I think you need a true number one receiver. I think Kelvin Benjamin he's a big body target. I don't know if he's a number one wide receiver. And that's probably why Carolina was so okay with trading him away, because they didn't feel like he was a number one. Devin Funchess down there was becoming their number one receiver. Kelvin Benjamin is a big receiver. You can throw the ball up to him in certain situations, which is why they actually threw it up to him in that game. It just wasn't executed. He can definitely create matchup problems for an opposing team, all of that stuff. But ultimately, he's not a number one wide receiver. I think he's a good number two wide receiver. I think you need to have a number one guy, a guy who can get down the field, a guy who can run every route on the route tree, do everything you ask him to do.
There's plenty of time to talk about their needs, and we will when we return to do the show next week. Today we're talking about kind of a review of 2017 and what you think was the best roster move the Bills made in the past year. John Dubik tweets in, it's not hard not picking Poyer and Micah Hyde, but moving down in the draft and getting an outstanding player like Tre'Davious White and getting an additional first-round pick. I'm kind of inclined to go that way. The draft picks they acquired, I think, may have been the best roster move that they made
last year. Let me tell you, that move right there, and we've been talking about the trade of Sammy Watkins, the trade of Marcell Dareus, cutting certain guys, letting guys go. To trade back 17 spots in the draft when there were so many guys, think about how that draft played out. We were saying, all right, well, this guy's going to be gone. This guy's going to be gone. It seems like they were all sitting there at their spot, and they didn't take one of them.
They didn't take Pat Mahomes.
Right. They just traded back. They said, you know what, we'll go ahead and trade back. We're going to get an extra draft pick. And then you still got a guy who has played like the rookie of the year. That is a huge move right there.
Complicated thing to evaluate, too, when you look at 2017, because – at that time, draft day, Doug Whaley was still the general manager.
Yeah.
And I think had a voice in that draft room. I'm certain that he did. With Sean McDermott obviously having a strong voice in that draft room. But it just makes it a little bit more complicated when you evaluate the year and personnel for the Bills.
That's the truth.
You know?
Yeah. He definitely had a voice in there. And it is complicated. I think this year will be a little bit different because Doug Welly's not here anymore. It is Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott's show now, you know. So this draft might be a little bit different than drafts in the past. We don't know how much of a voice Doug Welly had last year. We know he had some of a voice. I don't know how much. But I know this year is Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean's draft. So we'll see their whole philosophy and how they go about it.
Here's a call from Corey in Buffalo. Hello, Corey. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I definitely think that we did a lot of moves that just weren't smart. Like, we got rid of Sammy Watkins. We got rid of Woods. We got rid of a lot of receivers that we definitely should have kept. And I understand that Watkins was hurt or whatever, but he didn't have the type of injury where he wasn't going to be able to come back and be 100%. He was always going to be back. He was going to be Watkins.
You didn't know that, though, when you made that trade on August 10th. You didn't know that, right?
That Watkins was going to be back at 100%?
Yes.
Well, yeah, he didn't have a career-changing injury. He didn't have the type of injury where
he had two surgeries on the same foot. Obviously, had you known he'd come back healthy, you would have factored that in. But I'm just saying, Corey, I didn't know, you didn't know, the Bills didn't know how strong his comeback would be from that injury.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But I think the odds of him coming back and being still a great wide receiver were pretty good.
I don't know if I agree with that, Donald. What do you think? I'm not cutting you off here, Corey. So hang tight.
I just think.
Well, you think the odds were strong that he was going to come back and be a great wide receiver? I don't know that they were.
I don't know that they were. They've talked about different wide receivers in the past, or even just athletes in the past who have had the same type of injury, gone on to have multiple surgeries. Usually, the second surgery they come back a little bit better, but you don't know what that bone is so small in there. You don't know what's going to happen. So his value at that point was high, you know. And if he did come back and get hurt, then you wouldn't get anything in return for him, you know. Or if he came back and had a crazy season, now he's going to be wanting whoever knows what the wide receiver market will be.
Report
this year.
Today, by the way, that the Rams are going to.
But he did come back, and he is doing great now.
Oh yeah,
he's doing okay.
Wrong move to make, and it's not like he's the only wrong move we made. It's a lot of wrong moves that we made.
What are some of the others, Corey?
Getting rid of Woods. The other receiver, getting rid of.
Now, let me stop you there. Robert Woods had the option to go. They could have kept him, but he was an unrestricted free agent, and they elected not to keep him, but they didn't get rid of him. I think there's a slight difference there. But go ahead, Corey.
Not to keep him, but they should have elected to keep him. They should have kept him.
I don't know about that.
Instead of drafting Zay Jones, like, we had good wide receivers. Like, if we would have had Kelvin Benjamin, Watkins, Woods, right now, we would be a dynamic passing offense.
Well,
you got rid of some
but
guys.
you wouldn't have the extra picks that came with trading away those guys.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
You would not have the extra picks, the extra draft capital, which is clearly what they were looking for too, right?
Well, I'm talking about this season.
I mean,
the future is the future, but this season, if we're trying to win a championship and we're trying to go to the playoffs, then to keep that talent there is all right.
Well, they went to the playoffs. But, okay, I get it. Yeah, you're making all the right arguments, Corey, if you want to make that argument. And I'm just saying that there's a cost that they paid to get those draft picks. I like the fact that they paid that cost. I like how they set themselves up for the future. There's no, you know, I was just about to say the Rams are going to put the tag on Sammy Watkins. Did you see that this morning? So that's going to cost them a ton of money to keep Sammy Watkins. He'll be, among the highest paid receivers in the game. Does he merit that? Does he warrant that?
Really?
Not based on his production.
That's interesting. I mean, Robert Woods is getting paid good money. Tavon Austin's getting paid good money out there. One of those guys has to go. It's probably going to be Tavon Austin who gets cut from that team. But you still got to pay Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to at some point have to pay your quarterback in the next couple of years. So that's pretty interesting that they're going to put the tag on to Sammy Watkins. But going back to Sammy Watkins and trading him away, not bringing back Robert Woods, I think the biggest thing to remember, and we say this all the time, new coaches, new GMs, when they come in, a lot of the times they do want their own guys. Now, there are guys from the previous regimes that they will keep. But when you have guys who are trying to get big-time money, you know, and you're a new coach, you're trying to build something different, that's some of the decisions that you have to live with and walk away from, you know, because do I really want to pay this guy? I can probably draft a guy that can do what Robert Woods did. And coming at who – now, we're looking back hindsight right now. You didn't know that Sammy Watkins would finish out a season healthy. We didn't know that last year. You had the injury. not injury issues from the past. He's injury prone. You had the one injury, the foot issue. All right. You didn't know that. I know Robert Woods is a very good receiver. You didn't know he's going to go out there and have over 1,000 yards. He just fit into that system. I wish that they would have kept Robert Woods, but I tell people this all the time. Robert Woods wanted number one. He didn't want to be the number two guy behind Sammy Watkins in this offense here. And that's just me knowing Robert Woods. He did not want to be in Sammy Watkins' shadow all the time. He wanted to be able to create plays himself, make big plays for the team. In this offense, if Sammy Watkins was here and 100%, Tyrod Taylor was going to go to Sammy Watkins. Robert Woods did not want that. He also got a big-time offer from a team in his hometown.
He went home. That's a
right.
big thing for him.
He was not going to come back to Buffalo. I mean, that's just what it was. Even if the Bills matched that offer, he was going to leave, especially if it was your hometown, Los Angeles, a stadium where you played in college ball, all of that stuff. He wasn't coming back, you know? So I don't even think the Bills could have entertained that. Even if they wanted to, I don't think he would have come back.
On Watkins, ESPN.com reported today the Rams are expected to use a franchise tag. They traded away a second-round pick and E.J. Gaines for him last August, so that's not a surprise. Watkins' production this past season, 39 catches. It's not killer numbers.
No, not killer numbers.
Eight touchdowns, that's really good.
Yeah.
He's 24 years old. That's obviously good. Augurs in his favor. The tag for wide receivers this past season, $15.7 million. Hmm. So you put the tag on him now, what are we talking about, $16, $17 million for Sammy Watkins in 2018 for 39 catches? I'd debate that with somebody. Is that worth it? He probably will get more than 39 catches next season. But
yeah,
$18
so.
million. Dollars.
You're tagging him. He's going to be one of your key guys.
Yeah.
It's going to be Robert Woods, Sammy Watkins, and Cooper Kupp's show out there. And it just goes to show how important they feel about the wide receivers in that system right now with Jared Goff as the quarterback. He's comfortable with those guys. They want to make sure that he has his playmakers out there so that they can continue and have the season that they had this year next year.
All right, we're off and running here. The best roster move the Bills made over the past year. What do you think it is? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The business of the NFL. We've got the man to talk about that, Andrew Brandt, who writes about the business in the NFL. He's going to be joining us next when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Got a good topic going on today. We will get back to in a moment. The Bills' best personnel move of 2017 from start to finish in the calendar year last year. Let us know what you think. We'll get back to that in a moment. Want to spend a few minutes talking about the business of the NFL, where it's at, by our regular contributor. He is a columnist for the MMQB and for The Atlantic, the host of the Business of Sports Pod. He deals with the business of the NFL. Happy to have Andrew Brandt on the line with us. Andrew, welcome. Happy New Year. I don't think we've talked to you in the New Year yet. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. And, of course, there's always stuff going on. It seems like once the season, or at least regular season, ends, my world gets crazy, just as I did when I was with the team. It's just a ramp up once it ends.
Yeah. You know, Andrew, I want to, before we get into the business of the NFL, we're going to make this one quick. I know, you know, you're down at Villanova, man. What's the vibe down at Villanova with them being so good in basketball? Are you a big basketball fan?
Yeah, I am, and I work closely with the athletic department and Jay Wright in terms of making sure these guys are set on the business side. Last year, sitting with Josh Hart, who's now with the Lakers, going through agents with him, meeting different people, and I'm going to be doing the same after this year. It's great. You know, people. When I go around, people think because of basketball, Villanova is this huge place. We got like 8,000 students.
Yeah.
So it's really great to see these kids do so well. They're good kids.
You know what I admire about – we're not on a basketball show here, but I admire the way that they have grown in basically in Jay Wright's tenure from – kind of a regional, Big East, Eastern College, small university, regional basketball presence to a major national force. Obviously, the national championship a couple of years ago. Before that, though, they were kind of like, you know, in a club with, I won't say Rutgers, but with Boston College and, you know, just sort of like nice little Catholic Eastern schools that played a little basketball from time to time. Now they're a national presence.
Yeah, and you know, I'm biased, but they're good kids. I don't know about other schools, but it seems like some of these one and duns are just kind of looking at it as a way station, and I've never seen that with kids here. They're all kind of, you wouldn't call them all the top top-level recruits around the country. Maybe they're a tier or two below that, but they buy in, and it's kind of weird seeing them, on TV and nationally ranked number one when I just sort of see them around campus as normal kids.
Yeah. We're with Andrew Brandt. He is director of the Morehead Center at Villanova Law School. But let's talk about some football, and let's talk about one of your previous jobs, Andrew, with the Green Bay Packers. Kind of a big shakeup, and maybe it's because, they're up there in Green Bay. The kind of stepping away by Ted Thompson and the hiring of Brian Gutekunst doesn't have kind of a big national profile, maybe not as big a deal in some minds. I think it's a big deal for that franchise, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because as I've written and talked about, change comes very hard for Green Bay. It's like some ways they're stuck in the Lombardi era. And I just think this is something that probably needs to happen, an evolution. Ted Thompson, who I worked with for 6 years, very astute scout, one of the best, I think, in the business. But really, that's what he wants to do. I don't think he was ever comfortable kind of being that media presence, that voice, that running the whole show. And I think he's going to do exactly what he was doing. He's going to scout. And Brian calls him a mentor, Gutekunst. So Ted will still be very involved. Brian, like all GMs in Green Bay, comes from that serious scouting background. I knew Brian, worked with him, just a likable guy, cut his teeth on the Southeast region, college scouting background. And he'll shake it up a little bit in Green Bay, but it kind of be the same. He's very close with Mike McCarthy, and that will continue. But it is nice seeing some change in Green Bay.
What can you tell us about Elliott Wolf, who finally left Green Bay? And, of course, his dad kind of built the modern-day Green Bay Packers. Going to Cleveland now, what do you know about him?
Yeah, another astute evaluator that was in our draft room, when he was in high school. And knew him from Ron. In fact, his girlfriend was our babysitter in Green Bay.
That's what I love about Green Bay. Those kind of things go on up there.
Yeah, another fun fact, they fired Dom Capers. Dom Capers almost came this close to buying my house. But he had two other houses from stops along the way, so he wanted to rent. Anyway, so Elliott goes to Cleveland with John Dorsey, with Alonzo Highsmith, and... Wow. I mean, it's Green Bay. What is that? Southeast, West? I don't even know what that is. In Cleveland. And they're going to sort of build it the way we built it in Green Bay, draft and develop, but also try to hit on a free agent here or there. And Elliott, I told the story morning of the 2006 draft. He brings me in his office, shows me some receiver from Western Michigan. Say, no one knows about this guy. We're going to take him in like the second round. I'm like, what? And his name was Greg Jennings, and he turned out to be this wonderful player for us. We did, in fact, take him, and he was a wonderful player for many years.
Now, the wide receiver situation up there in Green Bay is getting a little interesting. Somebody has to be probably released, cap casualty type of thing. They signed Adams, so now you're talking about either Cobb or Jordy Nelson. Who do you think will end up gone off that roster?
On Devontae, people in the league were calling me because of my background there saying, hey, you think they'll let him out into free agency? Mm-hmm. Devontae Adams would have had multiple suitors. And for him to sign, it shows you the value of, I think, Aaron Rodgers. Because, man, to sort of forego free agency 2 months before the doors open. Now, he got 14 a year, which is huge, but, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, they're at 15 a year. So I just think he could have really broken the bank, but he wouldn't have been playing with Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So what a steal, I think, even at the highest number for the Packers. And we'll see what happens with Jordy and Randall. I mean, Randall's another guy that was a free agent a couple years ago and could have had more in Jacksonville and stayed. So... and that's happened before and that's just the incredible value of someone like Aaron. We'll see what happens with those other guys.
Andrew, I just got to squeeze in one more question, and it deals with our rivals over in New England and the reports coming out of there about rifts between Belichick and Brady and Bob Kraft. What do you make of all that, and when the dust settles, whenever New England season is over, what do you think this power structure looks like next year in New England?
Yeah, and by the way, I got time for one more after this.
Okay, all right.
I do, so
Thank you.
You don't have to rush out. The thing that caught my eye was two things. One, the franchise quarterback we just talked about. Do I know what the relationship between Brady and Garoppolo? Of course not. But it's no secret that superstar quarterbacks are humans. And when they see the guy everyone's talking about in the building every day is that's going to replace them, that can't be a great feeling.
Right.
I dealt with it with Brett. And with Brett, way before Aaron, we had Matt Hasselbeck, who was the next big thing.
Yeah.
We had Aaron Brooks, who was the next big thing. And, of course, Aaron. And then, you know, Brett's a professional. Tom's a professional. But they don't like that. The other thing is the Guerrero part, which I think is really interesting because people don't know how often that happens in sports, all sports, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, where these superstars, or not even stars, even average players, have their guy, their massage, their chiropractor, their psychologist, everything. And that doesn't align most times with the team strength conditioning training staff. And team trainers are very territorial.
Mm-hmm.
They have a right to be. They're paying them millions of dollars. So this is the most high profile of all of these is Guerrero and the Patriots. But it happens throughout the league.
Andrew, I wanted to talk about, we talk about this every year after the season. We look at the NFL's ratings and reports come out. You know, the ratings dropped 10% from last year. Last year, everybody talked about the president and all of the stuff that was going on with the, you know, Trump and all of that stuff. There are a lot of other things that you could say, well, that was a reason. But this year, you don't have any of that stuff. So what do you think is the reason for the 10% drop?
Well, there's two parts to the story. There's the 9 or 10% drop that you talked about, and then there's the rest of the world. And I think the rest of the world, the NFL's doing great. Now, I don't know the exact drop that we're seeing in baseball or hockey or basketball or, more importantly, entertainment programming, but it's significant. And it's the way of the world, and I've talked about it with millennials and cord cutting and not watching TV, watching screens. You know, I think the NFL continues to be the best buy. When I see 27 of the top 30 programs were NFL, I'm like, okay, well, ratings are down, but geez. I mean, geez. So I continue to think this is a problem for the ESPNs of the world, but it's not a problem for the sports leagues because you're going to have the Yahoos and Twitters and Amazons in the bidding now, and that can only help. So it's a problem for the networks, but not for the leagues, in my opinion.
Andrew, thanks for this. It's always great to talk with you. We'll talk again. We appreciate it.
Likewise, guys.
Andrew Brandt, columnist for MMQB and The Athletic, and, of course, he is our expert on sports law, football football business as well, and we're going to get into that. You see, even the wild card ratings were down significantly from last year to this. I don't think the Bills-Jacksonville game had a whole lot to help in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I've read different things on how TV ratings are dropping, period, across. It doesn't matter if it's sports or non-sports, just general TV ratings are dropping. But you know in the NFL, when ratings drop, everybody wants to talk about it.
Yeah, they want to change the rules. That's what they typically do. Let's eliminate this. We're going to take a break. We're going to get back to our original topic today, which deals with the Bills in 2017. What was the best roster move they made going all the way back to the start of the year? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll free, 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We got a heck of a show. We're already underway here. Talking a lot about the Bills and their best personnel move of 2017. We'll get into that with Chris Brown. Brownie's going to standing by. He'll join us at 1 o'clock today. Does he want to spend an hour, you think?
I hope so.
He probably has nothing else to do. He can't. Oh, that's right. We got a guest at 1:30.
You think he'll be like Thurm?
Yeah. Can I stay?
I got nothing. Yeah, can I stay?
No, he can't. Producer's right.
Like, I should have left.
We got Pete Bursage talking about the Vikings-Saints game coming up at 1:30. And then at 2 o'clock, Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL matchup. And that's how we finish the week. We're finishing strong today with the week. Our Twitter poll deals with the Bills in 2017. And we want to know from you, what was the best personnel move they made in 2017. We got it up on Twitter about an hour and a half ago. Strong response already. What was the Bills' best roster move in 2017? Go all the way back a year if you want. Two-thirds of you say adding Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. All right. 66% say that. 18% say drafting Tre'Davious White. 14% say all the draft picks they acquired, 2% have something else in mind. There are other things to talk about, including the addition of Stephen Hauschka,
yeah,
including some of the other moves they made, Kelvin Benjamin. You know, there was a lot that went on in personnel on this team last year, and I think it's not a cut and dried, well, it's got to be Poirier and Hyde. I don't know. I'm willing to discuss and hope you want to discuss as well.
I just think it's draft picks. I think finding a quarterback is the key to you sustaining a winning franchise for a decade and a half. You know? And there are teams that you can look at throughout the league that will prove that argument, starting with the team that's been at the top of this division for so long. You know, if they didn't have Tom Brady, who knows if they would have as many Super Bowls or even as many division championships as they've had over the last decade and a half. So I think you need to find that guy. And so the fact that they drafted who they drafted last year, but what they did in the first round of the draft to trade back and get an extra first-round pick, I think was a great thing for the future of this franchise if they decide to go ahead and use that on a quarterback. A
tweet from Lead the Stampede who says, as much as I like the revamped secondary, the biggest move was getting extra picks. The Bills still have many holes, and having picks to use to address them is huge. Or perhaps using the currency to move up and get the franchise quarterback is most important for the future. Great summary. That's kind of the way I feel. Love the new safeties. Love the addition of Hauschka. Love what Kelvin Benjamin might be able to do when healthy next year. But to me, the biggest personnel move, the most significant one, is getting all that draft capital, all those draft picks.
Here's what's crazy. We're all looking at it like, man, they have so many picks, they can move up and get a franchise quarterback. And that's what everybody is going to say. Even all of the national reporters, when Mel Kiper and those boys will have each team and the team needs, quarterback is going to be probably the number one thing for the Bills. You got to find a quarterback, unless they pick one up in free agency, one of the big name guys. I think you don't know what Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are going to do. They might not even draft a quarterback.
They might. You're right.
They'll mess around and trade out of the first round and get more draft capital for the second round. I mean, that's what you're dealing with right now. Those are the types of moves that these guys will make. And just imagine, people will be like, you still didn't take a quarterback? What are you doing?
Imagine the remote controls will be broken when people throw them at the set next April 26th. We'll see.
If they did something like that, they draft like a left guard.
Running back or something like that.
Yeah. What?
All right, we'll talk about it with Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Standing by to join us next. We got a tweet here from Alex Jones who said, are you guys going down to the Senior Bowl? Hoping I see you there. Chris Brown's going. Yeah. We'll talk with him about it. That's just a couple of weeks away, so come on back. We'll talk with Chris live in studio. You can phone in your comments and questions at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive, where it is all quiet here after the early portion of the week with Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean talking to the media about the upcoming offseason. No moves to announce by the Bills today. Players are gone as we are deep into the offseason mode. The NFL will cut back its presence in London by one game this next season, from four games to three, the announcement coming today. For the first time, though, the entire schedule will be played in consecutive weeks, as the NFL tests out new structures for the series in the United Kingdom. The schedule features three teams who had not yet played in the international series: Seattle, Philadelphia, and Tennessee. The London series begins in week six with the Seahawks game against Oakland at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. In the following 2 weeks, the Eagles will play Jacksonville and the Titans will play the Chargers, both at Wembley Stadium. The order of those games will be announced closer to the start of the season. Around the NFL, coaching moves. The Chicago Bears have hired former Oregon coach Mark Helfrich to run their offense. He is their new offensive coordinator. He was fired by Oregon after the 2016 season. Norv Turner, former head coach in the league, arrived in Charlotte yesterday to finalize details on a deal to make him the next offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. And Rich Gannon says he spoke with Raiders coach John Gruden and declined an opportunity to be the Oakland Raiders quarterbacks coach. Gannon played for three seasons under Gruden with the Oakland Raiders. Sabres home tonight against Columbus at KeyBank Center. Their final game before the Buffalo Sabres bye week. It's a 7 o'clock faceoff. Zach Bogosian left yesterday's practice with an injury, and Jack Eichel's been selected to represent the Sabres later this month in Tampa for All-Star Weekend. The third-year center leads the Sabres in goals, assists, and points. It'll mark the first All-Star Game appearance of Jack Eichel's young career. That is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio, and joined in studio by our good buddy from across the way, upstairs. They're not upstairs. He's on the same level as us, but he's in a part of the building that's, I consider, sort of the wasteland of the building, Chris.
Wow.
Gee, thanks.
No, well, not a knock on you guys or your crew back there, but you just
We are where we are.
You are. Yes, you do a good job, too, given the circumstances you're forced to work in. No, it's kind of it's like, you know, at least our office looks like an office.
Make your place sound like I'm working in the pit of misery.
Like you're in an old closet.
Yeah.
But actually, we are, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. But our old closet is nicer than their old closet.
Yeah. We have no windows.
The pit of misery.
Nor do we.
Dilly dilly. There's an Instigators happy hour tonight.
Why are you asking me?
I don't know. It's here on our chat here. I think.
Go on. What do you know about it? I don't know anything about it.
No, it's an Instigators happy hour at 716 from 5 to 7.
Okay.
Are you going?
I assume Andrew Peters will be there along with
I think you've just invited the whole Buffalo community too, Donald.
Yes.
Well, that's
are you
fine.
Going? You should go then. Now that you brought it up,
I will be flying out. Tonight. But I was informed to bring it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess we were supposed to inform everybody
at 716, 5 to 7 p.m. The Instigators Happy Hour.
Right.
Good.
There you go.
Okay. You're going, Brownie?
No, I have to politely decline. I have another engagement.
Good. Okay.
Soccer?
No.
Oh.
Chris. Let me get you involved in our Twitter poll. It's as good a place to start as any. By the way, Chris is with us for the next 15, 20 minutes or so, and you can phone in comments and questions at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. We've been – all week long, we've sort of tried to recap the 2017 season before we spin it forward and look ahead. And, you know, we've done who was the MVP this year. We've done what was the best thing John McDermott did this year, et cetera. One thing we're into today is what was the best personnel move, the best roster move the Bills made in the last year, all year, 2017, go all the way back to the draft and even prior to that, the free agency. Let me show you what we're doing on Twitter. Two-thirds of the respondents on Twitter so far say that adding the safeties, Poyer and Hyde, was the best Bills roster move in 2017. 18% say drafting Tre'Davious White. 14% say acquiring the draft picks. 2% have something else in mind. What do you think? I go with acquiring the draft picks, but I'm open to suggestions.
Boy, it'd be hard, man. You package Poyer and Hyde together. That's that's almost tilting the scale here. I don't know if it's even fair. Once you're pairing them together, I'd probably.
Are you going to critique our Twitter question?
I'm just saying again? you
we
made
get
it
a lot of that.
You made it an easy choice for me. Oh, I guess is what I'm saying. I would go with Poyer and Hyde. I know Trey White's been a boon of a first round draft pick, and Deion Dawkins looks like the left tackle of the future, but. It's hard to beat the tandem that had 10 interceptions this year. I mean, my gosh, those guys were the reason the defense excelled. I mean,
look, but you don't have to look at it in terms of what helped in the 2017 season. What's the best move they made? That's why I think acquiring the draft picks, trading away those guys, getting draft picks, having all that draft capital will help, not just next year, 2018, but maybe deep into the future.
So what was the exact question again?
The exact question is what was the Bills' best roster move in 2017?
Yes.
What would you rank as the best? Not the only good one. They've made a lot of good ones.
Well, but because it's 2017, I would technically say it's still Poyer and Hyde for me. Because
it was made in 2017.
Well, see, now you're hedging.
No, I'm not.
You're hedging the question. You just changed the whole language of the question.
I will read it as it is. What was the Bills' best? What was the best Bills' roster move in 2017?
And I'm going to still say it's Poyer and Hyde because that happened in 2017, and we saw the results of that. I mean, I'm not knocking what you want to vote for, Murph. That's certainly you're entitled to that. But for me, I think it's the reason I go up with Poyer and Hyde is because we know more of what it produced, where the draft choices and the draft capital they've acquired is more of a projection. I hope just like you do that it reaps tons of rewards and benefits for the football team, but I don't think those are going to be realized until 2018 at the earliest.
Okay.
So that's why I picked Poyer or not.
Okay. So you are more focused on what happened last year because I think they made
– I'm focused on the results that are tangible and we can hold in our hand and say these guys are great.
Why do you have to be so contentious about this? It's a simple.
I'm not being contentious. I'm just explaining my reasoning for my decision.
What is, you know, it's a good thing we have a couple days off. Everybody needs to get away.
It makes your show more interesting anyway. What do you want, some yes man
I
over here in this chair?
I want you to agree with virtually everything I say. Yes, that's the idea.
And then,
that's,
then people are turning the radio off.
If
so
you
come out,
the
we gotta,
rehearsal,
we
you
gotta argue about something.
Of the show.
You got to argue about something.
Chris, where are we in this off-season right now? I know we're very early, but as quiet as it is, I get the sense that there are some serious meetings going on upstairs, up in your wing of the building upstairs where the football decisions are made.
Yeah, you know, they've got to evaluate everybody from top to bottom, players, coaches, support staff, scheme. You know, I think it's all being fit together. And then, you know, that will, after they make certain decisions based on those evaluations, they'll have a plan together for where to go with this roster, whether it be draft prep, free agency, all of that, their own free agents, who might still be out there come the first week of the season, contract status of certain players, most notably Tyrod Taylor, who's got that $6 million bonus coming up in early March, just before the league year ends and the new year league year begins. So it's a long list. It is a long to-do list. And it's the first full offseason here for Brandon Bean also. Let's not forget that. I mean, he didn't get hired until May, when the nuts and bolts of the offseason are largely complete by that point in time. He was just trying to help backfill a roster by the time he came on board in May. So this time he gets a full offseason to work with McDermott, who he's worked with obviously in the past before. It's not like it's new ground they're covering, but as head coach and GM it is, so working together. So it's going to be interesting to see how these guys work in lockstep to make the important decisions here in 2018.
On that topic, we spent considerable time over previous regimes, most recent regimes, talking about who controls the 53-man roster. Why is that not an issue with this group, and why do people not bring that up?
I think it's because they think very much alike. I think they come from the same football philosophy about how to build a roster, and I think that's largely why Brandon Bean was hired. I think they wanted a parallel universe, for lack of a better term, between coaching and front office, and I think they have that in Bean and McDermott. I don't see these two men being diametrically opposed on a lot of things with respect to the roster, with respect to salary cap, with respect to free agency, draft. I really kind of see them running on the same track in a lot of different areas in terms of the areas and the ground they have to cover this offseason to build this roster and make it stronger.
We're with Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. John Murphy and Donald Jones talking to Chris, and you're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Today is the one-year anniversary of the day that Sean McDermott was hired, I believe. We did this topic on the show a couple of days ago, and I want your take on this, Chris. What was the most significant thing that Sean McDermott did in his 1 year here as head coach of the Bills? What's the most important thing he did?
I think he set a standard for how this team is going to operate on a daily basis, what the expectations are. There were clear lines that were drawn in the sand. You know, this is the standard. You have to meet it every single day, whether it's week one, week eight, week 16, OTAs in May, mini camp in June. This is the standard. The mantra was playoff caliber, but I think he capably painted the picture to the players of what the expectations are from them every day. He wants players holding each other accountable. He wants players holding coaches accountable, and vice versa, obviously. And that's easier said than done, and because he was able to do that when a lot of other coaches weren't able to get that done is impressive to me. And I'm not saying that previous head coaches didn't get some of those guys on board, but I don't think anybody was as effective in unilaterally getting the entire roster on board, moving in the same direction, all fighting for the same thing.
How much do you think – now, it's one thing for a coach to come in and say, this is how we're going to work, and for him to even be detail-oriented and do everything the same way, try to get everybody on board. But then when you start to let a lot of talent go, guys that – people on this roster might look up to, how much do you think that plays into everybody truly falling in line? Like, this guy is not playing around. He will cut me if I don't fall in line.
When when you get rid of the three top draft picks from three of the last five drafts, that's going to catch some attention.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy Watkins, number one pick in 2014. Ronald Darby, top pick in 2015, albeit in the second round. Mm-hmm. And Marcell Dareus, top pick in 2011. You just jettison three of those guys, and it's not like you were getting first-round picks in return.
And Reggie Ragland.
And Reggie Ragland, who gets a four for them in 2019. So, you know, that's your second-round pick from last year. If that doesn't grab your attention, you're not going to be on this roster very long. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody who was doubting or wondering how much they could get away with, it was over right then and there. And for that matter, I'll just say this. I don't think there are too many of those players left on the roster anyway. They were either cut, moved off the roster, traded. So by the time they got to week 2, 3, and 4, I think this roster largely was made up of the character-type players that Sean McDermott looks for. And being able to push this team to a 9-7 record when it was a roster that was long on character, certainly longer on character than it was on talent, I think is a feat in and of itself as well.
Chris Brown is in studio with us. We'll take your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris, what was the critical point for the 2017 Bills season in your mind? What was the tipping point, do you think?
Tipping point to get them to 9-7?
Yeah.
I would say pulling out of the three-game losing streak. Those are three games that went as bad as you can possibly go. I don't know that it could have gone any worse, especially from a defensive perspective. Not that the offense wasn't devoid of their own struggles, but to be able to get through that stretch and still play good football down the stretch. I mean, what'd they win?
Four
of their last six. That was the difference than Bills teams that we've seen in the past. Because when a three-game losing streak would hit in the past, bang, it's in the tank, it's over. Not to bring up bad memories here, Donald, but the 2011 team, 5-2, and then they lose 9 of their last 10. They never came out of the tailspin. And we've seen other teams. It's not just the 2011 team. You can run down the list of teams that put themselves in a good position in the first half of the season, but then as soon as a bad game happened, they could not pull out of it, and it just compounded itself and got worse and worse and worse, and there was, you know, just a death march of sorts to a lot of the second half, through a lot of the second halves of the season. The fact that McDermott was able to pull the team out of that three-game losing streak, number one. Number two, pull them out of it when one of the biggest miscalculations was one of his own in putting Peterman in the lineup, I think said even more about how much these players believe in him as a head coach. To move past all that and still play quality football down the stretch that's pretty rare stuff right there.
There was no residual effect, it seems, of making that quarterback switch. There was nobody in the locker room among the player group or the coaching staff that said, oh, why do we do that? You know, after it was done, it was like, oh, we're going with Tyrod again? Okay. They just sort of moved on.
Kansas City. And we'll never know specifically what was said, you know, in the team meeting that Wednesday the following week. I mean, for all we know, Coach McDermott maybe gets up there and says, that one's on me, guys. We got to move on now. And what have you. It's a very delicate balance that you've got to strike there as a head coach, because you don't want to stand up in front of the room and say, I screwed up, because now you're bagging on Nate Peterman and saying, well, yeah, I was dumb to trust you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a fine line you've got to walk there. You can't submarine your rookie quarterback because you made the miscalculation. You've got to be very diplomatic in how you walk that line and convince the players, this was my miscalculation. We're going to need Nate down the line here at some point again. And they did in the Indianapolis game. But at the same time, we've got to move forward. Nobody's perfect, myself included, but let's go forward. We still have an opportunity here. And they bought in, and they stayed on board. Nobody jumped off the ship. And, you know, the reward at the end was a playoff berth.
You know, I think he said in his press conference he will – he sticks by his decision. Obviously, it didn't play out the way he wanted it to, and I think that's what he probably said to the team. Yeah. Guys, I stick by my decision. It didn't play out the way we wanted it to play out, but, you know, I stick by it, and now we just got to move forward as a team. And that's just it, point blank, period.
Yeah. But I don't know if some people would have been as convinced on other teams where the character and the leadership mm-hmm. wasn't as strong as it was here. And that's why a team that, like I said, was longer on character than talent was able to gut out 9 wins and get yeah. a playoff berth.
I remember when Lee Evans was released and they made me a starter. I remember certain guys on the team that year that went publicly and tweeted out, are we trying to make the playoffs here? And I remember thinking to myself, like, wow.
What are you saying about me?
Yeah, what are you trying to say?
Who said that?
You know, I'm not going to put the names out there, but
I remember
you
know, that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
You remember who?
I can't remember who specifically. I want to say there was a high-profile defensive player that did it, and then I think there was another player on offense that did it.
Yeah, and it was, in my mind, I'm like, wow, you know, is that how you really feel?
Apparently, well, you don't now, think I
now,
can do the
yeah,
job.
Yeah, exactly. Now I know how you feel. I know how to work around you
see,
in the locker
room. See,
but
it's that kind of stuff that undermines, you know, the unity of a football team. So, you know, you heard these guys all season talk about how they have bonded with each other, done stuff off the field, how they learned about each other's families, certain adversities they've faced in life, challenges, all of that stuff. And it made them battle harder on the field because they knew the guy next to him was going to do the same. Now, how do you think Donald Jones felt going out on the field when a guy's tweeting, I don't know if we can get to the playoffs now because we traded Lee Evans and Donald Jones is in the lineup? Do you think – I mean, I'm not going to question yeah. Donald's professionalism, but – that makes it a whole lot harder sure. to, you know, sacrifice your body on a downfield block to let the guy that tweeted about you get an extra 10 yards on a play. I think it's harder.
Yeah.
It's you're definitely
gonna,
harder.
You're not going to tell us?
No. I won't throw him under the bus. We can talk about
well, he
it
doesn't
off
wanna,
here.
He doesn't want to execute the same lack of professionalism that person did.
It's history now, though. It's water over the dam.
No, and then it would come back up now, you know. Everybody would tweet this person, then I got to hear about it from this person years later.
Chris Brown is in studio with us. Chris, more immediate concerns. You know, this week they are meeting, and there are the reports out there from Houston that Brian Gain, the Bills' vice president of player personnel, is going to be named the Texans' general manager. I don't think that's happened yet, but it looks like it's headed in that direction.
That's
right?
What a lot of the national reporters are reporting at this point in time. I know fans wonder, is this going to impact the draft preparations? Not to any great degree. I mean, Brian Gain oversaw all parts of the personnel department. He was kind of the overseer for pro and college. But the guys that do a lot of the grunt work are still on board, whether you're talking about Terrence Gray, the director of college scouting, or Lake Dawson, the assistant director of college scouting, or Malik Boyd, the director of pro personnel. All of those guys are still in place, still on board, and do a lot more of the grunt work, while Brian Gain has a firm working knowledge of everything and oversees it all. And I'm not going to dismiss the fact that he did have boots on the ground and was, you know, looking at people and scouting people and putting together his own reports. But I don't think this cripples the pre-draft prep in any way, shape, or form with him going out the door.
Do you know, or you probably don't know, but who you think they would somebody step up into that role, or would they bring somebody else in?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if we've seen enough of how, you know, I mean, Brandon Bean isn't even a year on the job. Does he necessarily have to fill that thing immediately? I don't know. It wouldn't shock me if they wait until post-draft
yeah.
and then determine as a department, do we need to fill this role, or are we in a position where we can operate without it right now? Or do I want another voice from an experienced personnel man, you know, in our front office to help him and Joe Shane, the assistant GM, kind of navigate their way through,
right.
you know, augmenting the roster with more talent?
What about, and it's been speculated, too, about the coaching staff, maybe changes, nothing coming from that group yet. But if we're not in the middle of it yet, we are approaching the middle of that season, right, when coaches are being hired, offensive right. coordinators are being hired, defensive coordinators being hired all over the league. And I think Sean McDermott addressed it pretty well the other day when he said, you know, you got to be light on your feet, as they used to say, right? You got to be ready to move if someone's going to poach your guys, as happens around the league, or if you want to make a change, you got to be ready to pull the trigger.
Right. And, you know, there is that concern out there that if you do want somebody else, you can't wait long right. because if you covet them as a potential hire,
somebody else
obviously has. There are other teams that feel much the same way. So, you know, it's a difficult balance to strike because you're trying to do right by your own team by doing a complete and thorough evaluation of the people that you have on your staff, do right by them, benefit of the doubt type stuff. I mean, these are guys you worked with every day, sometimes 14, 15 hours a day. You don't want to just throw them out in the wind and say, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. I'm good here. I think you want to do right by them and give them a fair and complete evaluation, even though you might have preconceived notions in your head. I think Sean McDermott's the type of head coach that is going to still go through, not to make light of it, but go through his process of giving proper evaluations to everyone on his staff and then go from there. And if he is genuinely concerned that there's somebody out there that he feels can upgrade an area of his football team that he might risk losing, well, then maybe he does have to pivot and make a decision a little bit quicker than maybe he envisioned with his own timetable.
Hey, Chris, we're 11 days removed now from the euphoria of New Year's Eve and the Bills' victory in Miami, followed 15 minutes later by the crazy finish, Cincinnati beating Baltimore. When historians sit down, can't even say this with a straight face, when they sit down to write the history of the 2017 Buffalo Bills, what will breaking the playoff drought, ending the playoff drought, where will that be? Will that be the most important thing about it, or would the you know setting the foundation for the future maybe take precedence?
No. What are we taking into account here? The Sean McDermott tenure? What's our frame of reference here?
Yeah, I guess
we're talking about. Top 10?
Why can't you answer my question?
Well, I want to answer accurately. That's all.
No, I think
we talking 57 years of Bills history, or are we talking
when historians look back on this season
on the timeline of this franchise?
If we do in 10 years, you know, the Bills' greatest top 10 greatest moments,
it's going to be
this is one of the top 10 moments.
It's going to be the locker room ending the drought, how they got into the playoffs. So it's going to be the reaction in the locker room. You have to show obviously the plays from Baltimore game.
Yeah.
Since the turn of the century, I mean it's probably number one right now, isn't it?
You're probably right. Yeah.
It's probably number one, and then you know, not to knock the Pegulas, but the Pegulas ownership takeover is probably number two. This probably bumps that down to number two since the turn of the century, most memorable moments in team history. I think those are probably the two right now for this century, top two.
Okay.
Are you with me on that? Or?
Yes.
I don't know if you can top this. I mean, they're in the play. They got to the playoffs.
Yeah, some tension up here, man. I think everybody needs to step away.
We
for
need
a couple
those
of
days
okay.
off. We need days off.
You're allowed to disagree.
No, I know.
It's healthy.
I like messing with Murphy.
It's healthy. It sparks more debate.
I told him earlier, I don't like agreeing with him.
I just think there's something important happened here this year. Look, let me put it this way. If Dalton and Tyler Boyd don't make that play, and if the Bills get locked out of the playoffs for another season, I still think what happened here this year with the 2017 Buffalo Bills was very significant. What McDermott did coming in here, winning nine games, but beyond that, what he did as far as laying the foundation for the future. If that play isn't made in Baltimore, I still think this was a monumental year in the recent history.
I just think you'd have a monumental task in trying to convince enough people of that.
Right.
Because people are only people are only focused on the results, and the playoff berth is the result. Without that result, I think you're in the debate of your life for the general Bills fan in convincing them of that. Myself, Donald, we have our ear to the ground here every day. We see Coach McDermott operate with players, coaches, people in the building. We see what his MO is, and I think we would all agree that it is different from anything we've seen here this century at the head coaching level. And we can see that, but on a daily basis, fans don't see that. They see coach on Sunday, and they see coach at a press conference. So I 100% agree with you. I just don't think it's readily realized by the general Bills fan just because their access isn't the same as ours to know that the Pegulas have the right person in place, and it's going to happen. You just got to see it. And it might take a year or two before it's fully realized and appreciated by the general Bills fan.
Okay. See that? He agrees with me. See? Chris, have a great little hiatus here. We'll get you back in here.
Murph, what Murph would do is he'll ask you the same question in a few different ways to get you to, at some point,
that's because
agree
of
with
his
him.
Media background. Yeah. That's your job as a media person.
I want the answers I want. Thank you, Chris. Chris sure. Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Donald and I come back in a moment. Pete Bursich, former NFL tight end. He's a color analyst on the Minnesota Vikings Radio Network. They've got a big game up there at 4:30 on Sunday. The Vikings hosting New Orleans. We'll talk with Pete Bursich about it when we come back. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We're live at One Bills Drive. The playoffs move along without the Buffalo Bills. That's been going on, obviously, for 17 seasons, but a little bit different now with the Bills finally qualifying, and yet they go on with the divisional round. And one of the games coming up this weekend, maybe the most intriguing game coming up this weekend, is the last game to be played on Sunday at 4:40 p.m. Buffalo time at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minnesota. It's the Saints and the Vikings, and joining us on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline to talk about it for a couple of minutes is the color analyst for the Minnesota Vikings Radio Network. He is also part of the Vikings Entertainment Network, works for a KFAN and WCCO Channel 4 in Minnesota. Former NFL player, happy to have Pete Bursich on the line with us. Pete, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones here in Buffalo. Congratulations, divisional round. Last time we talked to you was way back in the first week of August when the Vikings were coming here to play a preseason game. It's the season's long, a long and winding road.
That was a long, I believe it was Kelvin Benjamin that blew up in that game, was it not? Or one of your receivers had a good game against us.
Yeah, Kelvin wasn't with us back then.
Okay.
Might have been Sammy. So, I don't know if it was Sammy.
Sammy
had a good game.
He doesn't play with us now.
Yeah, that was the day before he got traded.
That's right. It was the day before Sammy got traded. Yep.
And then you guys ran the ball up and down the field on us. So it's just weird how the season goes and how things change. But, everybody here is excited. I know that week off was pretty good. People like Kyle Rudolph, his ankle's been bugging him. He's been limited for the last couple weeks. He's coming back. He's good. Pat Elflein, our center, he's had some shoulder issues. He should be ready to go. So from a health standpoint, the guys are ready.
Now, when everybody talks about the Vikings, I feel like they talk about the defense. Case Keenum gets talked about, but is he underappreciated right now, in your opinion?
I think what Case has done – that's been key for this team is he's not turning the ball over. And by that, he's not, he could be more aggressive and put up more touchdowns maybe. But he's been very smart with the football, and, not putting the defense in a bad position has really helped, I think, the overall team. I think what he's lacked in arm strength and maybe down the field accuracy from a Bradford standpoint, he's made up for with his mobility. He's very, very mobile in the pocket. He's been tough to bring to the ground. So he's been buying himself some time. And I think the big thing on Sunday is going to be taking advantage of New Orleans deep, because they're not going to stand there on their heels and play coverage. These guys are going to be aggressive. They're going to try to get after Keenum and make him throw down the field accurate throws and tight coverage.
Are you talking about Case Keenum or Tyrod Taylor? I mean, it sounds like he's described Tyrod Taylor when he plays the game.
Well, I mean, it's pretty similar, in that way. And fortunately for us, the offensive line has been vastly improved from a year ago. Those guys up front, we brought in Riley Reiff, we brought in Mike Remmers. You draft Pat Elflein. Those guys have played very, very, very well. And if they could keep Case Keenum upright, I think we'll be just fine.
On the line with Pete Bursich, Vikings radio color analyst. Pete, on that Vikings coaching staff, who gets the lion's share of credit for the season that Case Keenum had this year? Obviously, Keenum has to take bows for his performance, but it's got to be somebody on that coaching staff who not just saw what he could do, but kind of brought out his best.
Well, our offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, took over midway through the season last year. If you guys remember, North Turner just up and quit.
Right.
And Shurmur took over, and then this year was able to come in there and install more of his system. And he's had a few head coaching interviews over the last week during the bye week. So, I mean, he's getting rewarded for his efforts. But, I, the one thing that's been consistent is the quality of our scoring defense since Zimmer has become head coach, and the continued development of the players that we have. I mean, not just Everson Griffin, but Linval Joseph and Daniil Hunter and Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes. I mean, these guys that that you know you don't maybe hear about every day: Anthony Barr, Eric Kendrick, Harrison Smith. They're all playing at a higher level. They're getting right. better year in and year out. And an old guy like Terrence Newman, who's been a huge add, his experience and his smarts and you know his ability to teach these younger guys, you know, how to watch film and how to do those things. You know, it's just a really, really good group. And I mean, on average, we're giving up 12 points a game at home. So the defense is done, you know, a vast amount of the yeoman's work. And you know, over the last three games, we've given up 10 points. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, we've been playing some teams that are out of the playoffs, but you know, they you know, Cincinnati. I mean, these guys have NFL caliber players too. They get paid. Right. They're professionals, and the defense has played really, really well.
Hey, Pete, give us something. Now, unfortunately, the Bills and Bills fans have watched the New Orleans Saints firsthand come into Buffalo and blow out the Bills. Give us something that, in your opinion, you might be worried about that the Saints can exploit in that Vikings team.
Well, did you know that that's the last Saints victory on the road? Was against
no,
you guys.
I didn't
that's
know
the
that.
Last time that they've won it. That's the last time they won a game
that.
On the road. You know, Alvin Kamara is a very, very, very talented young man. And, you know, you just got to keep track of him. And they will put him in positions and run different wheel routes and switch routes and line him up at wide receiver to try to get him one-on-one with linebackers. And even in tight coverage, Drew Brees is going to throw him the football. So, you know, I would think they're going to have to come in here with the crowd noise and, you know, after, you know, how they played Carolina, I don't think is necessarily how they're going to play everybody else. They're going to be a much more balanced team on the run. But, you know, with Pete being hurt, their offensive guard, I mean, they've got some, they have some nicked up guys in the offensive line. And, you know, if Linval Joseph and Tom Johnson and those guys can be physical up front, I think, you know, that's the only way that you're going to be able to do it. You watch the Rams against the Saints, guy like Aaron Donald, some guys that are in penetration from the interior defensive line to make the play not go downhill but more outside. I mean, those are keys. Those are things that the Vikings are going to have to do.
We saw the Saints put up 47 points against the Bills here, Pete, and I know they're capable of that, but I would think the Vikings got to feel pretty well equipped with a smart guy like Harrison Smith at the back end of that defense, who probably won't be fooled by anything the Saints show him this Sunday, huh?
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, the thing with Harrison Smith and what makes him so good is he does so many things well. I mean, he's good in coverage. He's very, very good in run support, and he's also a very good blitzer. I mean, you know, when I was coaching, Ed Reed was in the league, and that guy defensively through the air was unbelievable. But he wasn't a tackling safety. Where I think Harrison Smith is one of, if not the most complete safety, in you know in the NFL. But I mean, they've got some speed with Taggett Jr. They got some size. I believe with Coleman, I believe he's about a 6'4" receiver. You know, Hill actually showed up last week. Their tight ends. I mean, he's starting to show up a little bit. I mean, they have options, and we know this about Drew Brees, is he's a very accurate passer. He's all of 5'11". He might be 6 foot when he's laying down after sleeping for 8 or 9 hours, but he's not very big, and that changes the pass rush because you don't want to give him throwing lanes. You give that guy time and you give him throwing lanes, he can pick a team apart. Right. So he's been on the move a little bit more lately, rolling them out. He's made some really nice throws, actually, when he's been on the move, so you know, we'll see. I mean, we match up very well with our defensive ends. They're both very athletic, Everson Griffin and Daniil Hunter. So, you know, it's going to give them some problems on the, you know, getting on the outside of our defense. But it's wide open. I really think that it's going to come down to our offense and Case Keenum being able to make some tight throws. And there are going to be opportunities deep early to Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, because of how they play defense, because of how they blitz. I mean, you look against Carolina, it was 4th and 26, the season's on the line, and some teams in that case would rush 3, many would rush 4, they blitz, they send 5, you know what I mean? That's just who they are. They are a very, very aggressive group.
Hey, Pete, now you guys have a huge game. I think that one probably is the best game this weekend. So this might not be on your mind yet, or it might be. But fans here, we're talking a lot of quarterback stuff here, as obviously we don't know what's going to happen with the quarterback situation. I think you guys might be in a similar situation after the season is over with the three quarterbacks that you have technically on your roster. Which one of those guys will end up the franchise quarterback moving forward, and which one ends up on the streets?
You know, that's the question du jour, and that's going to be the topic of conversation whenever this season does end for the Vikings. And, you know, of the three that you have, I think Bradford's the best if healthy. If we're just going to look across the line and say if everybody's healthy, I think it's Bradford, then Bridgewater, and then Keenum. What little bit that we saw of Bridgewater he got a chance to get in a little bit, I believe, against Cincinnati. He didn't look too impressive. He didn't look like he was moving around very well. And so that's still a cause for concern. I mean, this would be about two seasons that he's been completely out. And, you know, those skills erode after a while. So Teddy's going to need a training camp. He's going to need some time to get back in there and get back up to what he used to be. You know, Bradford, the big question is it degenerative? Is his knee, the issue that he's having with his knee, is it degenerative? It was a non-contact injury that kept him out or put him on IR. So that, you know, that's a big concern. So there's not a clear, you know, it's not a clear answer, but you do have to give Case Keenum a lot of credit for what he's done, you know, this year and in his ability to lead this team. I mean, we go back to the Bears game, I believe it was about week four or week five in Chicago, and Bradford was in, and he looked awful. He was sacked, I think, four or five times in the first half, and Case Keenum came in, and I'll never forget him running on the field, running in the huddle, and he's just, you know, he was telling everybody, let's go. It's the time to win the game. Let's take this thing over, and he did. So there's an intangible there in leadership that Keenum has.
Hey, last thing, Pete, before I let you go, this is, I believe, the first ever playoff game at U.S. Bank Stadium, right? You've mentioned the noise. What will the atmosphere be like there Sunday afternoon?
You know, it is the first playoff game at U.S. Bank Stadium. It is a loud stadium. You know, for the fans in Minnesota, you know, we've been through 09. I called that game in New Orleans. I played in the one in New York when we lost 41-0. Talking about NFC championships here. 98 when Atlanta came in here and beat us when we were 15-1. So the fans here are a little snake bit, but I think they're gonna show up, and it's gonna be pretty rowdy, especially if Atlanta beats Philadelphia and there's a possibility of that NFC championship game coming to Minnesota. Then I think the place will be absolutely, you know, a riot.
Have you guys, I know we're gonna let you go here in a second. Are those guys and are you guys talking about the possibility of the Vikings being able to play at home in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a big topic up here because the Super Bowl's here, so everybody's talking about the Super Bowl. And, they've talked about how, you know, the Vikings would still be in their home locker room, but they'd have to wear their, you know, away jerseys because the NFC is the visiting team, and how kind of how weird that would be, and how is it going to affect the economy if, you know, half of the fans that are going to be there are already up here instead of renting hotels. And, you know, it's a good talker. You know, I've been around this thing for, been around the Vikings now for, what, 20, 22 years, 23 years. And this is the best overall team that the Vikings have had in quite some time. I mean, the offense might have been better in 98, but the defense is so good, and they're so good at home and so consistent. There's going to be some things that are going to need to go New Orleans way in the form of turnovers or things like that for them, I think, to put up more than, you know, 14 or 17 points.
Hey, Pete, have fun with that on Sunday. We wish you well. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you. Pete Bursich, a former Vikings linebacker and coach, and he's a radio analyst on the Minnesota Vikings Radio Network, joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. I didn't realize that. He's right. That Saints win in us. Buffalo, yeah, they lost at the Rams, at the Falcons, at the Bucks.
Wow.
That got my attention.
I did get that because we were looking at it like this team is a machine.
Yeah.
You know, and I still think that's the favorite to win it all in the NFC and then get to the Super Bowl. But when you think about that, you know, they've lost some games down
road
the stretch
games.
Here.
Yeah, roadies. We're going to take a break. We'd like to re-engage with you about the Bills' best roster move, personnel move they made in 2017. Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio. We're here until 3. We're off tomorrow. We're off Monday. We're off Tuesday.
Yes.
We come back Wednesday. I think it's a perfect time, Donald. Look, we've exhausted the topics, I think, as far as looking back to 2017 this week with our 4 shows this week. Plenty of time to talk about it as well. But we come back next week, we'll kind of dive headfirst into the 2018 season. I'm excited about that, too.
Which means we're going to dive headfirst into quarterback talk.
Quarterback talk, I mean, yes, that's coming.
That's exactly what we're going to be talking about a lot. But there are so many more holes on this team than just a quarterback. It's crazy. Now, we all know it starts with the quarterback. You want to find a franchise quarterback, all of that stuff. But there are a lot of holes on this team. You need to figure out a lot of different positions. So we got a lot to talk about.
We got Mike on the line who wants to talk about, what do you think, quarterbacks? Hi, Mike. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how you doing? Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year, Mike.
Happy New Year.
Hey, yes. I just want to know, I'm happy that the Bills made the playoffs. I'm happy about that. I'm sure Bills fans. But, you know, like I said before, I can have a few beers and I'm old enough to hang out with family and friends, but that's not the point. The point is, with Tyrod Taylor, do you think we should get rid of him or maybe have him read the playbook and maybe get a second quarterback like Cousins maybe and think about doing that wise or do something else? What?
Second quarterback like who? Man, I couldn't understand.
Cousins.
Cousins. Oh, Mike. Yeah.
Cousins.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's pretty clear. I believe this, and it seems pretty clear that the powers that be here believe that Tyrod Taylor is not the long-term answer. They wouldn't have made the midseason move they made if they thought that. So I think that's pretty evident. But he does pose a good question. At what point do you move on? And you've got that, you know, they've managed the last 2 years now, each of the last 2 years, rework his deal to keep it team-friendly. They might be in position to do that again. But I would not be adverse to moving on. And I think the question is going to be, and a question we'll address when we talk about this, Donald, is are Bills fans ready to take a half step back if you don't bring Tyrod Taylor back? If it is a rookie, if it is maybe another veteran free agent playing quarterback, are you ready to take a half step back if need be? I don't know. It's easy to say, sure, I'll do that, but are you really?
You
really ready to do that? I don't know.
What's a step back when you are 31st, 32nd in passing?
A step back is 8 wins, 7 wins instead of 9 in a playoff berth.
Okay. I mean, if you can get better in the passing game, you might win a couple more games.
You might.
You know, I think it's hard to say you're really taking a step back if you've been so bad in passing in the last couple of years. You know, so you're trying to get a quarterback in here. Now, Tyrod Taylor has done a lot of different things with his legs. So you're going to – if you're talking about bringing in you
that
and
play,
his kid.
if you're watching on the MSG feed, that play with Ngakoue, the aggrieved party, cracking Tyrod Taylor with a helmet, on his helmet, no flag, that play bothers me.
Yeah.
That really bothers me.
Yeah, that was dirty.
The aggrieved victim.
Yeah. I forgot what we were even talking about.
About half a step back.
Oh, yeah. So if you're talking about Tyrod Taylor, he does a lot of different things with his legs. So you might not have that component of your offense. You might have a totally different looking offense once you bring somebody else in here who might be more of a pocket passing type of quarterback. But I don't know if you can take a step back when you've been so bad in passing the last couple of years in a row.
And we'll see. A lot to discuss and a lot of quarterback talk coming up. We're going to talk about the Bills game at Jacksonville in the next segment, a little bit more on that. And we're going to look ahead to the four divisional playoff games coming up this weekend. Greg Cosell standing by to join us from ESPN's NFL Matchup, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. We'll check in with Greg Cosell when we return after the top of the hour, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills waiting to see whether the reports are true, whether Brian Gain will move on after 1 year with the Buffalo Bills and become the next general manager of the Houston Texans. That's a report from NFL.com. Brian Gain was with the Texans for 3 seasons before he came to Buffalo as the vice president of player personnel. Last general manager in Houston, Rick Smith, took an extended leave of absence to help his ailing wife. Texans finished 4-12 this year, ready to hire reportedly Brian Gain as their new general manager as he will leave the Bills organization. The NFL getting ready for more games in London, but one less game than in years past. It will reduce its presence in London by one game from 4-3. The schedule features three teams who have yet to play in the international series, Seattle, Philadelphia, and Tennessee. It all starts in Week 6 with the Seahawks and the Oakland Raiders at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. In the following 2 weeks, the Eagles will play the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Titans will play the Los Angeles Chargers, both at London's Wembley Stadium. Chicago Bears have hired former Oregon Ducks head coach Mark Helfrich to be their offensive coordinator. He was fired by Oregon after the 2016 season. Former NFL head coach Norv Turner is in Charlotte finalizing details on a contract that would make him the next offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. His son Scott, an analyst who worked with the quarterbacks at Michigan, also coming to Carolina as the next position coach for Cam Newton. Rich Gannon says he spoke with new Raiders coach John Gruden and declined an opportunity to be the new Raiders quarterbacks coach. Gannon played three seasons for Gruden during his final stint with the Raiders. Sabres home tonight against Columbus, their final game before their week off, the bye week. It's 7 o'clock faceoff at KeyBank Center tonight. Zach Bogosian left yesterday's practice with an injury. More information coming up on that later today. And Jack Eichel has been selected to represent the Sabres later this month in Tampa for All-Star Weekend. The third-year center leads Buffalo in goals, assists, and points. It will be the first All-Star Game appearance of Jack Eichel's young NHL career. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. It is John Murphy Show, hour number 3, third and final hour of the show. Normally on Fridays we get a chance to talk to our next guest, but we are off tomorrow, so we're happy he was flexible enough to let us talk to him today, Thursday. On the line with the analyst and producer of ESPN's NFL Matchup, longtime senior producer at NFL Films, Greg Cosell on the line with us. Greg, John Murphy and Donald Jones here in Buffalo. Thanks for being with us here today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it, guys. Good to be with you.
We've coming off, the wild card loss for the Buffalo Bills last Sunday in Jacksonville, where they really couldn't get anything going offensively. Greg, can you have any insights that you can share with us about Buffalo's woeful offensive performance down in Jacksonville?
Well, you know, it's funny. I thought that the Jaguars really had an excellent feel for the play action pass game and the play action boot game, because there's no question that the Bills came out, Murph, and tried to do that early in the game on the first couple of series, and none of those throws were there. The Jaguars had a really good feel. I think they had a sense that that would be the way that the Bills would want to attack them. As we talked last week, that's really the only way the Bills generate big plays in the pass game, and the Jaguars had a real good feel, and they took it away. And once they took those things away, it became difficult for them to really generate any kind of explosive plays.
So, Greg, did they truly exploit, Tyrod Taylor and his limitations and that being one of the only things in terms of the passing game that the Bills could do?
Yeah, I mean, look, Donald, we've talked all year. We know that the Bills' passing game has limitations, both with Tyrod, with the receivers. It's not a great receiver group at this point. But they knew that there were certain things that the Bills could do, and really only those things. And if you take those away, it makes it difficult for them to move the ball through the air.
You have a phrase. We've talked to you a lot about the Buffalo offense over more than a year now, Greg, and you always refer to it as, scheme-based passing offense. Can you elaborate what that means and maybe what limitations that, what that imposes on the Buffalo offense, fact that they are scheme-based?
No playmakers. And, Murph, every team is. I mean, every team runs schemes, obviously.
Right.
But I think the only real way that they move the ball in the passing game explosively, plays that are either 15 or 20 plus yards, is with route concepts that break down the defense. So in other words, their specific route concepts, they're very big with what we call three level stretch. I know Donald knows exactly what I'm talking about, where you run three routes to one side of the field and you do it against zone predominantly, and you have a short route, an intermediate route, and a vertical route. And you're counting on the distribution of those routes to create a void in the defense. And more often than not, you hit the intermediate route. They've done that many, many times this year. It's been one of their staple concepts. That's a schemed play. You're calling it anticipating what the defense will be, and you feel good about the probability of getting that defense, and you kind of know that the intermediate route will be there. So it's a simple read for the quarterback. He's not really reading. You kind of know it'll be there. So that's what a schemed play is. You're not relying on receivers to win one-on-one. Yeah. You're not relying on your quarterback to make stick throws into tight windows. The scheme, the route concept, breaks down the defense and allows for, by NFL standards, a relatively easy throw.
So, Greg, that was a long way to say you don't have a number one playmaking wide receiver
or a quarterback, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always uncomfortable. I rely solely on the tape. I'm always uncomfortable, talking about guys, saying a guy's not very good. I think, we all know that Tyrod Taylor has limitations. I'm sure the organization will be having major discussions about that. I'm sure you guys wouldn't be surprised if Tyrod's not the quarterback next year.
Yep, that's safe to say. I wonder, red zone offense in particular, and the Bills had that sequence down at the 1.5-yard line with the Kelvin Benjamin pass, penalty after that, and then they couldn't get in the end zone. Do you see, as you look over there, I know you look at every team, but are there anything about the Buffalo red zone or even short yardage offense that you see that's a problem or was a problem in that game?
It's funny, Murph, you say that, because as soon as they get Kelvin Benjamin or you get big receivers like that, the first thing people say is, oh, that's really going to help them in the red zone. So, of course, then they do it and it doesn't work. And then people say, well, why didn't they run the ball?
Exactly. Have you been listening to our show all week? Because that's what people say.
No, well, but that's the way it works. If he happened to catch it, people would have said, oh, that's exactly why they got Kelvin Benjamin, so they could do that in the red zone. So, of course, when he doesn't, then it becomes a bad play call. I never know how to respond to that, because I find those, to me, are what I always called guys access to the result comments. That's one reason you theoretically get a guy like that. And then when it doesn't work, then all of a sudden it's a bad play. So I always feel like there's nowhere to go with that. You can't win because the result tells you that it didn't work. But that's why you're getting the guy.
Greg, I've been saying this all week, and the guys in the locker room said it was a run pass option. Tyrod did make the right read. It just wasn't executed.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it was one-on-one with a – I forget who the corner was, but you're dealing with a 6'4", 6'5 receiver who weighs 230 pounds. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's why you do that. You're exactly right. It was one-on-one.
Greg, as we look forward, and obviously the quarterback question will be paramount for the Buffalo Bills, but what else might they need to add offensively to get up to speed offensively, and particularly in the passing offense? You can't survive being the 31st-ranked passing attack.
No. I mean, here's my opinion from tape study. And again, I'm sure Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean might, they'll see it their way, and I'll look at it my way. But based on my tape study, I think they need a couple of things. I think they need some explosiveness at wide receiver. Now, they just need more competition at wide receiver. They got nice play from someone like Deontay Thompson, but Deontay Thompson had been with two or three teams, so no one thought of him as being a high-level NFL receiver, but he fit with them because they just needed receivers. So they need to upgrade that position. To me, watching tape, I think they need more athleticism on their offensive line. Now, that doesn't mean they need five new guys, but I think they need more athleticism on their offensive line.
Greg Cosell is on the line with us, executive producer, analyst, NFL matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. Let's talk about the weekend coming up, and let's go right through these wildcard games in Atlanta and Philadelphia. We know the Eagles are handicapped losing their quarterback, but what's their best path to victory, at least going into this game?
Well, let's look defensively for a minute, because I think the Falcons' O-line has struggled a bit this year, and the Falcons' offense has not been anywhere near as good as it was a year ago. And I think the Eagles' defensive front is really, really good. And I think that's an area where the Eagles can control the game with their defensive front against that O-line, and I think they're going to have to control the game. To me, they're going to have to win a low-scoring game. Because the Falcons' defense, on the other hand, has played exceptionally well. They've been a team driven by defense, quite honestly, over the last month and a half of the season, much more so than their offense. So, to me, the Eagles' defense is a really big factor in this game.
The Falcons, it's so amazing because you still have the same quarterback, you still have the same wide receivers, the running backs, even the offensive line. So the fact that their offense hasn't played as well as it did last year, it just goes to show how important the offensive coordinator was to that offense.
No question, Donald. That's absolutely true. you know, one thing we've talked about a lot in our matchup room is they don't have what we call the same run-pass fusion that they had a year ago. Last year, their run game and major parts of their pass game looked very much the same, and that makes it really difficult for the defense, particularly for linebackers. And this year, it just doesn't have that same feel to it. It's always hard for people to visualize, but when you sit and watch tape the way we do here in the matchup room, you just know that their offense has been arrhythmic. It's been out of rhythm. And last year was very rhythmic.
We're with Greg Cosell talking about the playoff matchups, the Saturday night game. The Patriots, after their week off, got the Tennessee Titans. On paper, maybe even not on paper, it doesn't look like the Titans would have enough here to do anything against New England. But what do you see in this game, Greg?
I think there's three things that Tennessee needs to do, Murph. And if they do them, it could be a competitive game. Number one, they have to run the ball with some kind of sustaining consistency. Whatever yardage number that is for Derrick Henry, that's game specific, but they need to run the ball with some kind of sustaining consistency. Number two, because their pass game is not that strong, I think Mariota needs to make improvisational second reaction plays, just as he did against Kansas City. And thirdly, I think that they need to put pressure on Brady. And they have the ability to do that. They have a very good pass rush, and they're very they do a lot with pressure schemes. Brady has not been quite as sharp over the last month of the season or so. The last game of the year, he was not very good against the Jets at all. I was very surprised watching that tape. So I think that they need to get pressure on Brady. If they can do those three things with any kind of consistency, I think they can compete. Whether they win, who knows? But and I understand that people will immediately say, well, it's the playoffs, Tom Brady will be great. Maybe he will, and this conversation will be pointless.
Right.
But who knows? Maybe he won't.
Now, do they have? We all know that right now, that offense, Tom Brady and that offense, they haven't been the offense of the past. But we do know that Rob Gronkowski can take over a game. And Brady, if he starts to go to him and it's working, he's going to continue to go to him. And Gronk can really just take the whole thing over. Do the Titans have someone who can actually cover Gronk?
Well, I think this is just my sense from tape study, Donald. I think that you might see two things in this game. They play a lot of man coverage. Now, that doesn't mean they will in this game, but they have throughout much of this year. So I think there's two ways they go about it. I think that when Gronkowski is aligned as a conventional line of scrimmage tight end next to the tackle, I think you might see the strong safety, Jonathan Cyprian, play him. I think when he's detached, I think you'll see the other safety, Kevin Byard, play him because Byard's a better athlete than Cyprian. So to me, those would be the two ways they might go about it. I don't believe they'll put a linebacker on him when they play man.
Greg Cosell joins us to talk about preview these divisional round playoff games. The other AFC game starts at 1 o'clock on Sunday with Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. And boy, we got an eyeful of Blake Bortles last Sunday, Greg. I'm sure you've looked at the tape. Hard to imagine the Jaguars.
Did you close
anybody.
Your eyes, Murph? What? You got an eyeful. Did you close your eyes?
Yeah, it was bad. I looked through my eyes. They beat the Bills, but other than that, how could they beat anybody with quarterback play like that?
It'll be difficult. And they're very predictable on offense. They run the ball. 75% of Leonard Fournette's runs this year have come out of some variation of base personnel, which means they do not have three wide receivers on the field. So what happens is Fournette runs against what we call loaded boxes. There's eight people in the box. There's nine people in the box. It's hard to run that way. And because of it, I think Fournette's become a little hesitant because he just runs right into a lot of people. There's really nowhere to go. So it's been difficult. I went back and looked yesterday at the Steelers offense versus the Jaguars defense from that Week 5 game that the Jaguars won. And I got to tell you, I watched it the week it happened, but it had been a long time, and I was surprised. The Steelers moved the ball. I don't think any of us think Ben's going to throw five picks again. So the Steelers moved the ball most of that game. So I think this is going to be a tough go for Jacksonville. I don't think they're going to win a game in which the Steelers – let's put it this way. I don't think the Steelers are going to score 9 or 10 points.
Now, the one thing about Jacksonville, and we all talk about their defense, but the most impressive part, or maybe not the most impressive part, because Calais Campbell is a beast up there, but the back end of that defense, the two corners, and Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Boye, those two guys have to believe that they can shut down Antonio Bryant, Juju Smith-Schuster, and the rest of those receivers that the Steelers have.
Well, it's funny you mention that, Donald, because when they played Week 5, they did not match up specifically to Brown. You know, in other words, it wasn't Ramsey who followed him. They just kind of played sides. Mm-hmm. And Brown ended up, despite the loss, with 10 for 157, by the way. And Smith-Schuster was not the factor in their offense Week 5 that he is now. So I actually think the Steelers are better on offense than they were Week 5. And even Le'Veon Bell, I'm not suggesting he's going to run for 150, because that is a very, very good defense. But he was not yet back to being Le'Veon Bell in Week 5.
Hey, Greg, Donald just sort of blew by Calais Campbell. I thought he was far and away the best player on the field last Sunday in the Buffalo game. He's not alone. He's got some teammates up there on the defensive front who can play a lot too, huh?
Oh, no, they're really, really good. Really good. And Campbell, as you guys know, he plays defensive end in their base. He moves inside to D-tackle when they go to their nickel. And he's a load for offensive guards when they're in the nickel. I mean, he's still a real force inside as a pass rusher. There's still snaps where he just literally drives back guards right into the pocket.
And, Greg, the final game of the divisional round playoffs and probably the premier game is New Orleans and Minnesota. We still are smarting over the 47 points the Saints put up on Buffalo back in mid-November, and they're just a force to be reckoned with offensively. But maybe Minnesota has enough. What do you see in this matchup?
Minnesota's defense is tough, guys. I mean, here, I'm usually not a numbers guy, as you know. You know, I love to watch the tape, but Minnesota leads the league in third down conversions defensively. You know how many third down conversions they've allowed in 16 games? 51. Think about that for a minute. That's just mind-boggling. So it's really hard to convert third downs against that defense. And I'll be very anxious to see how New Orleans comes out, because last week they made a decision that they were going to come out and throw the ball, put the ball in Drew Brees' hands, go pass first and throw it, and they had great success. Will they do that again? Who can say? But it's very, very hard to sustain offense against Minnesota.
Now, Case Keenum, known as a guy who doesn't really turn the ball over, he's done some things very well this year, but for him to be known as a guy who doesn't turn the ball over, is he going to give that offense enough? If the Saints' offense is really rolling, does the Vikings' offense have enough to truly score points with them and get into a shootout?
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, the more and more I watch Case Keenum, the more I like him. I mean, he's very tough in the pocket. He will stand there and take hits and deliver. He's got a deceptive ability to make stick throws. You don't think of him as having a big arm, but he makes some stick, tough throws. He's got very good second reaction ability. He has played really good football. And you mentioned, Donald, the turnovers. He's in six of his last seven games, he's not thrown an interception. So he's played really good football. I'm not saying he's Drew Brees. You know, no one would. But he's played better than the perception of a journeyman backup that's out there.
It sounds like, Greg, from what you're telling us about Keenum, they're not winning in spite of him or even around him. He's had a role to play, huh, in this Minnesota run?
Without question. Because, look, their run game, numbers-wise, is not bad, but it's not consistent week to week. They've had Latavius Murray's had a number of long runs on a weekly basis, which jack up the numbers, but they don't really have a consistent run game.
What kind of a game do you anticipate then? You got the number one defense, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Very solid offense in New Orleans. Who comes out on top? And we talking about a high-scoring game here? What do you think?
Boy, I'm really bad at this stuff, Murph, but, I mean, my sense is I don't think you're going to see a high-scoring game, and I know that's relative. Different people have a different sense of what's high-scoring. I wouldn't be surprised if you see a game that's in the sort of 24-20 range, but I'd be surprised, barring anything unforeseen, like turnovers, special teams, touchdowns. Right. You know, just if the game goes normally, I'd be surprised if it gets into the 30s.
All right. Hey, Greg, thanks. Great to talk with you. We'll talk again next week to preview the championship round. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL Matchup. You can catch that this weekend on ESPN, senior producer of NFL Films for 38 years. Greg joins us on Fridays typically. He'll join us next week, probably on Friday as well, to preview the weekend of games. Some interesting thoughts about that. And I don't know that he gave Jacksonville a chance Sunday's game, but at least there's a matchup there to look at, based primarily on the way Jacksonville plays defense, huh?
I mean, everybody's going to look back at the first time they played and say, well, Jacksonville blew Pittsburgh out earlier in the year. You're not going to – Big Ben is not going to throw five interceptions. I mean, you don't expect it to happen for him to do that, especially in the playoffs. Maybe one, two, maybe something like that, but not five interceptions where it makes the game that way. And you can't really expect for that Jacksonville offense to be able to score with Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh can put up – they can score with the best of any teams in the league. They have a lot of playmakers on that offense. So I don't think Jacksonville truly – I mean, their defense can slow them down a bit, but I think once you get into the second half and Big Ben and Antonio Brown – yeah, Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster, Martavius – what is his name? The wide receiver, the one Bryant. That was yeah, – Martavius Bryant. Yeah. You know why? Because we were just thinking Latavius Murray. Right. We get mixed up with these names. but all of those receivers and the running back, it's just hard to slow that down for a full game.
On the other game, in the game I'm most looking forward to, Saints and Vikings, he said the score will be 24-20. He didn't say who comes out on top in that one. I find that matchup intriguing. We're going to pick those games in a couple of minutes here on the show. But of all the four games this weekend, that's the one. Look, if there's a blowout, I got to believe it's going to be a Saints win because I've seen them do that. I saw them right across the parking lot. But I don't think it'll be a blowout. It's the number one defense in Minnesota, the number two offense in New Orleans in the league. I think it should be a pretty competitive game, and maybe it's a game where home field makes a difference.
It could be a game. I think the Vikings are – the one thing about the Vikings, nobody's really paying attention to the Vikings and realizes how good that team actually was this year or has been this year, how good Case Keenum has been this year.
Yeah.
You know, as we're talking about him being a journeyman backup quarterback, he's done a lot of good things for that team. So that game could be – and the fact that they're at home really bodes well for them. The fact that the Saints haven't won on the road since they played here – is a big thing, you know. So I think the Vikings definitely have a good shot in that game. It's going to be a good game. I think when you think about the rest of the games, I can see Pittsburgh turning into a blowout. I can see, obviously, the Patriots being a blowout.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, the Falcons, as, let's just say, arrhythmic, like he talked about with that offense, they haven't really been in rhythm this year like they were last year. I just think the Falcons will have too much for the Eagles. I don't think Nick Foles has enough to score points with the Falcons offense if they truly get on a roll and if those running backs get going and all of that stuff. I just think that they don't really have a shot in that game. You might have three blowouts and this one be the only good game.
I have not thought about the Vikings since August 10th, since the Bills
Me either.
Opened the preseason there.
Me
I have
either.
Not watched the full Vikings game since then, and I'm eager to see what they have. I see the numbers. I see people talk about them. I'm eager to see what they have against the team that I consider my favorite to win the Super Bowl, the Saints.
I tell you, he's a beast. Everson Griffin
is
a beast. When he played here, you remember that game, in the preseason game, Chantrell had a rough time with Everson Griffin, and he's had a very good season. So we'll see how the Saints' offensive line can block him.
We're going to get into all four of these division round playoff games in the next segment coming up on the show. We are also going to do our NFL true and false about some of the issues around the NFL. And we want to re-engage you on our Twitter poll. You can call us up on the phone and hear your voice on the air. Tell us what you think. The number to call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We're asking you to look back at the entire calendar year 2017 and pick what was the best Bills roster move in 2017. On Twitter, two-thirds of you say it was the addition of Poyer and Hyde to the defensive backfield. 17% of you say the drafting of Trey White. 14% of you say acquiring all those draft picks. And 2% say something else. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. We've got 30 minutes left in the show. Donald's holding up one of the commemorative T-shirts for tonight's Instigators Happy Hour. And it's a picture of our buddy Marty Biron with his famous saying, "Dis or dat."
Dis or dat? Yeah.
Love Marty. And,
but, you know, the one thing.
I think he said he's going to be at that thing tonight, right?
The shirt kind of looks like him.
Unlike the other shirts?
Well, it's just the eyes. They got to do something about the eyes, you know?
Yeah. Those eyes are...
They're not his.
Yellow.
Yeah, they're not his.
He's got distinctive eyes. But the Instigators Happy Hour, if you're into that sort of thing, it is preceding tonight's Sabres home game against Columbus. So if you're on your way down there, you want to stop by 716. Happy Hour with the Instigators. Craig Rivet, Andrew Peters, Marty says he'll stop by. It's presented by Labatt Blue. And the Labatt Bear will make an appearance, believe it or not. Tonight, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at 716 before the Sabres game against Columbus. The Bear was here today, Donald. Did you catch the Bear?
I didn't.
I don't know if it's a he. The Bear was in studio touting Labatt.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. the Instigators Happy Hour coming up tonight. We're here for another 30 minutes or so. We've got tomorrow off. We've got Monday and Tuesday off. So now's your chance as we kind of recap the 2017 season for the Buffalo Bills. And we want to hear from you. What was the Bills' best roster move in 2017, going all the way back a year, whether it was in October with the Darius trade and getting what they did for Marcell Dareus, or maybe picking up Kelvin Benjamin? I like that deal a lot. Whether it was releasing or trading away Sammy Watkins and Ronald Darby, picking up all those extra draft picks. Was it some of the decisions they made in free agency? I mean, a year ago, everybody was all on fire about Mike Gillisley. Didn't turn out to be much, did it?
No, it didn't turn out to be much at all. It was just because he ended up going to the Patriots. That was all it was about. If Mike Gillisley went somewhere else, then he'd just be another guy out there. But because he went to the Patriots, because Chris Hogan is there, because Stephon Gilmore is there, everybody made a big thing of it, you know. And look, the Patriots might take – you got a bunch of free agents this year. The Patriots might take some of those guys and pay them, and they might end up in New England next year. It's just – it is what it is. It's business.
Right.
Business as usual when you're talking about the Patriots.
What do you got up there on Twitter about Doug Whaley?
Doug Whaley interviewed for the Packers GM job.
Okay.
So he was the only external candidate that interviewed for that job. So it's just good to see Doug Whaley actually, you know, getting some interviews. I'm sure he'll end up somewhere. He's a very good scout. So yeah. I'm sure he'll end up somewhere as, you know, director of scouting or something like that. Even if not a GM again, but at least he'll be like director of scouting or something like that, because that is his strong suit.
You know, when we talk about the Bills roster moves in 2017, Doug Whaley has some ownership there. You know, making decisions like Gillisley and making the decision in the draft. We talked about how he had a role to play. To what extent, we don't know, but certainly right. A role to play in the draft, making the decision on Gilmore. You know, Doug Whaley has ownership in some of those moves. So when you evaluate the 2017 moves, if you like them or didn't like them, Doug Whaley has ownership in some of those moves. You can't deny that.
You can't deny it. Doug Whaley did a good job of bringing talent in here last year. You talk about the draft this year. He's done a good job of bringing talent onto the roster. There are other things that people have talked about in terms of contracts and all of that stuff, but I think Doug Whaley is a very good scout. I think that he has an eye for talent. He has an eye for talent, and he did a good job of bringing different guys off the streets, like a Mike Gillisley, who everybody was up in arms about, who went up to New England. That was, you know, Doug Whaley did a good job of finding him on the streets.
Hey, give us a call. Let us know what you think about the Bills' roster moves in 2017. We got a few minutes left here. 803-0550, the number to call. Want to play a little NFL true or false right now. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. We talked about 2017 a lot and the roster moves. Now we look ahead to 2018, and we'll dive into that when we return to the show next Wednesday. But at least one ESPN insider thinks the Bills are going to be among the league leaders in roster turnover for 2018. The Bills will lead the league in roster turnover, roster overhaul for 2018. True or false? What do you think, Donald? I'm going to go false with this. I don't know if they'll lead the league. I anticipate some changes. There always are. And I think with the age on the Buffalo roster and with the draft picks they have, yeah, there'll be a heavy turnover here, heavy lot of overhaul of the roster, but I don't know if they'll lead the league in roster overhaul. What do you think?
I'll go true, just because I want to disagree with you.
Okay, that's valid, sure.
I think when you look at how many free agents they have right now and then how many draft picks they have right now, I think they could be a team that has the most new faces to the franchise next year, to the organization next year. And we know that Coach McDermott is trying to get his guys in. He's trying to get his type of guy in here. Not to say that he doesn't have that now, but when you have so many – and we also know that they like to build through the draft. They like to have younger guys on their roster so that they will have a good core group of guys. You need to have veteran leadership also. But I think you're going to have a lot of turnover. This team might be totally different next year.
They have a lot of free agents of their own that they're going to have to make decisions on, including, obviously, most notably Kyle Williams. But there are others as well, including Leonard Johnson, pretty valuable defensive back, nickel corner. Ramon Humber, who started, I would think, the lion's share of games on the outside, and look up the number later. E.J. Gaines, who had a great track record as a starting corner. Preston Brown, who barely missed a snap this year. Again, you know, extremely durable and productive, led the league in tackles this year. Jordan Matthews, who feel like you'd like to see more from him. I know he's a good quality player and a good possession receiver, and just snake bit all year with his injuries. Brandon Tate, pretty good return man. Deontay Thompson had a role to play. Sharice Wright, the backup to E.J. Gaines. They're not going to keep them all of the free agents they have. There's no question about that. But they'll have some decisions to make, and maybe you know half of that number of the names I just mentioned will be back, I would think, maybe.
I even like Tavares Cadet.
Yeah, as a backup,
as a backup running back. I like Tavares Cadet, and you might still want to draft one and have him as your third running back. But I think he gave this team – he was a good complement to LeSean McCoy. He could still catch the ball out of the backfield. He ran hard. He could do a lot of different things in that offense. It was tough to see him go down after in that game. And I think it would be smart to bring him back and have him as your third running back.
NFL, true or false? Want to touch on this one. Norv Turner getting set to sign on with the Carolina Panthers as their offensive coordinator. True or false? Norv Turner will breathe life into the Carolina Panthers offense. He's an experienced hand. He's 65 years old. As Pete Bursich pointed out, he was the offensive coordinator for the Vikings a year ago, 2016. He's been out of football since then. I guess it's an okay hire. Will he breathe life into the Panthers' offense? I'm saying no, false. I think, you know, Norv Turner's time has come and gone.
I'm the same way. I'm going to go false on this. And I've been a big proponent. I've tweeted things out about finding you – know, I'm happy for coaches that get jobs and all of that stuff, but I think – there comes a point where it's time to get somebody young in there. You know, a guy who might have a younger outlook on things, a guy who might have a younger philosophy and call plays a little bit different. I think his time has come and it has passed on him.
So we both say false on that. And finally, NFL, true or false, the Raiders should expect the return of Chucky, John Gruden.
That is true.
You think it's true? Tell me why.
Now when we say the return of Chucky, we're just talking about the faces that he makes on the sideline?
Yeah, maybe the demeanor, maybe his approach. You know, he's a pretty animated, excitable guy. I guess he'll be like that again.
Yeah,
right?
I think he's going to be like it. I think he's, I mean, I think all coaches love to coach, but this dude truly loves it. And he was always animated. He was still animated this year on Monday Night Football. Now he's going to be back in the locker room with the guys. So I got to go true on this one. His demeanor, all of that stuff, but even just the face that he makes on the sideline is going to be – it's like he's stuck in Chucky mode once he gets on the sidelines.
I got false on this one. I don't know that that's going to happen. Look, you know this now, Donald, after being in TV for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of an act. And I think John Gruden has had an act on ESPN for a couple of years working with Tirico and Sean McDonough. Now, I wouldn't say the game has passed him by. I know he knows football and knows what he's looking at. But – I don't know. I don't see that. I think he was hired because the Raiders needed a popular coach to help them get through these remaining couple of years in Oakland and get them established in Las Vegas. And what better way to do it than to hire a name coach? They got a name coach. They got a That's big crazy. Name coach. But by the return of Chucky, what does that mean? I don't know. Let me say this. I don't know if it's going to be effective for them. I don't know that he is an inspired hire for the Oakland, soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders, because I think he's mostly a showman. I think John Gruden is a showman more than a coach these days.
You know, it's amazing that they actually fired Jack Del Rio. You bring in Chucky, John Gruden, out of the booth. You pay him $100 million for 10 years.
You can't get around the money, can you?
I mean, that's crazy. And all of this because you're about to make this move to Las Vegas and you're trying to get a big-name hire. Jack Del Rio didn't – I mean, they didn't have a good season this year, but last year he had everything going in the right direction until his quarterback got hurt. And then it was like nothing they could do at that point in the playoffs. But, man, come on. Jack Del Rio was a solid coach and had that team moving in the right direction.
There you go, NFL true or false, presented by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. All right, we started to get into this a minute ago. There are four division round playoff games coming up. Let's talk about who we think will win. I think we've established neither one of us is going to camp in front of the TV for, what would it be, a total of 16 hours over the two-day span. Don't see that in my future, but let's start. I don't want to do that. I mean, I want to pick my spots here. Atlanta and Philadelphia. This might be a game that I'll take a pass on tomorrow, but I think the Falcons have a little bit ahead of steam going on, Donald. They've got playoff experience. I think the Falcons are going to win this game at Philadelphia. I think the bubble is about to burst for the Eagles, and I feel horrible about them losing their quarterback. I love Carson Wentz, but they're going to miss him.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing the Raiders went through last year.
A little bit.
They had a very good season, and everybody, especially early in the season, is like, man, this team is a team that can go all the way to the Super Bowl, possibly win it. They were looking like the best team in football. We watched them a couple Monday nights, and once they lost their quarterback, it's like, oh, You got nothing now. And going up against the Falcons, I just think they have too much experience coming from last year and that loss. They know how to get back to the Super Bowl, and I think they're playing with that chip on their shoulder. We need to get back to the Super Bowl so that we can win it, and I don't think the Eagles will have enough. So I'm going to go Falcons.
All right, let's talk about Saturday night's game, and I will watch this, 8:15. I'm a Mike Mularkey fan. Hope he does well. This is just too tough for him. The Tennessee Titans just snuck into the playoffs. Patriots have had a week off. I don't believe the distractions mentioned, you know, with Brady and Belichick and Bob Kraft will have anything to do with this game. I think they'll be able to handle this one. I got the Patriots winning big Saturday night against Tennessee.
I got to go with you on that one. The Patriots winning big in that game, I just don't think they have enough. Marcus Mariota is not going to throw the ball to himself two games in a row and score a touchdown. I think
he was open.
He was open, but I just don't see it happening two games in a row. I think the Patriots have too much for the Titans in that game.
All right, then fast forward to Sunday, the 105 game, Jacksonville at Pittsburgh. Do I have to say this? We saw the Jacksonville Jaguars last Sunday, right? Bills fans, we saw them. I think, you know, obviously the Bills played really poorly offensively in that game, but we saw what Jacksonville has to offer. They don't even match up. I know they beat them, right? I know they had the five picks and beat them earlier this season. What was it, week five? But, no, this game is a mismatch. Pittsburgh rolls Jacksonville, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. Pittsburgh, I think, rolls them. I don't think Jacksonville has the quarterback that can score points with Pittsburgh, and that's just what it is. Jaguars, their defense is good. But I think ultimately once you get into the second half, the Steelers' offense will be rolling and the Jaguars won't be able to keep up.
What did Greg have the number? Was it Antonio Brown had the huge game against
Jacksonville? Yeah, 150.
And they scored nine points.
Yeah,
they
150,
scored nine
yeah.
points. 10 catches for 157 yards the last time they met. What happened? How did they only score 9 points against Jacksonville?
Five interceptions by Ben Roethlisberger.
Okay, that's a mismatch.
That was the game where, remember, he made the comment –
maybe something I can't like, play anymore.
Yeah, maybe I can't play anymore. Yeah,
he can play. Sunday, 4 o'clock, 4:40 p.m. Saints-Vikings, game of the weekend. Can't wait for this one. I will be parked in front of the TV for this one because, I admit it, I'm starting to like the New Orleans Saints, Donald. I think they're Super Bowl bound. I think they're Super Bowl champions. I think it'll be tough this week. Number one defense in the NFL at Minnesota. But this will be the test, I think, more than any other game. This will be the test for the Saints on their way to the Super Bowl. I think they'll pass it because I think Drew Brees is just about the best quarterback playing right now.
Now, I told the guys that I wanted to disagree with you on something, but I got to stick with the Saints on this one. I think they are the team that is going to end up in the Super Bowl. I think, like you said, this week is going to be a tough game matched up on the road against the Vikings in their dome, and all of that stuff will be going their way. But I think ultimately the Saints have way too many weapons, and they have a quarterback that has won a Super Bowl and a quarterback that has that offense rolling, and they have a defense. That's the biggest part of this thing. They actually have a defense and a running game this year, and it's a totally different situation than years of the past. I think the Saints have too much.
You know, when you – I don't bet on games, but when you pick games or look at games, and you always kind of start with the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Start with the quarterbacks in this one. Drew Brees versus Case Keenum.
Right.
Come on. Case Keenum's a nice story. Drew Brees is a Hall of Famer.
Look at the quarterbacks in every game. Matt Ryan versus Nick Foles.
Right.
You got Brady versus Mariota. You got Ben Roethlisberger versus Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
And then the game that we're talking about now. It's just total mismatches in every game.
Easy to pick.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that, Donald. We got more coming up in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
We learned presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned today from our guests? Well, from Andrew Brandt, NFL business expert, we talked about impending free agency all over the National Football League. Brandt, who spent a considerable amount of his career in the Green Bay Packers front office, talked about how much it meant to have quarterback Aaron Rodgers as a recruiting tool when the Packers went out to sign free agents.
Davante Adams would have had multiple suitors. And for him to sign, it shows you the value of, I think, Aaron Rodgers. Because, man, to sort of forego free agency 2 months before the doors open. Now, he got 14 a year, which is huge. But, you know, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, they're 15 a year. So I just think he could have really broken the bank, but he wouldn't have been playing with Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So what a steal, I think, even at the highest number for the Packers.
Andrew Brandt from ESPN's, or formerly from ESPN's NFL business component. We also had Greg Cosell on the show. Greg Cosell from ESPN NFL Matchup joined us to talk about matchups. And he had some thoughts on Buffalo's wild card playoff game loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars last Sunday.
I thought that the Jaguars really had an excellent feel for the play-action pass game and the play-action boot game, because there's no question that the Bills came out, Murph, and tried to do that early in the game on the first couple of series, and none of those throws were there. The Jaguars had a really good feel. I think they had a sense that that would be the way that the Bills would want to attack them. As we talked last week, that's really the only way the Bills generate big plays in the pass game. And the Jaguars had a real good feel, and they took it away. And once they took those things away, it became difficult for them to really generate any kind of explosive plays.
Greg Cosell, a little postmortem on the Bills' end-of-season loss in the wildcard game. We've done a lot of that this week, so much so that we need a break. A little programming note, Donald, you know this, our next show is next Wednesday. Off
right.
Friday tomorrow, off next Monday and Tuesday. When we come back, we will totally be reset and ready to look ahead to 2018.
You think the fans need a break?
Oh, yeah, of course. I think people
everybody needs a break.
Yeah, after, just take a break.
After the true high and then a low
yeah.
to the way the season ended, take some days off, and we'll get back to this thing.
Yeah, we'll get back to it next Wednesday. Hey, a Twitter poll today dealt with one aspect of 2017. Who do you think was the Bills' best personnel move in calendar year 2017? That's what we were asking on Twitter. Most of you, 67%, say adding Poyer and Hyde to the roster. 17% say adding Trey White, drafting Trey White. 14% said acquiring draft picks. Donald, last day today for two of our interns, the lunch lady, Shelby Rush and Olivia Merrill. We thank them for their support. They've been great, just in lunch, but all season long.
They've been great. Thank you, guys, ladies. But the lunch will be missed.
The end of lunch here on the show. Our production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, our producer, Jay Harris, and Kelly Root, also part of the project today. We'll see you next Wednesday, the next time we do the show, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.